Good morning, everybody. We are going to start our July 14th, 2020 regular board meeting. Welcome, everyone. And my screen has changed. Okay, there we go. We've got the flag. We are going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance. If everybody could please stand. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay. During this meeting, I'd like to just quick reminder, people are able to join online or via the telephone, and please send any questions or comments you have. Jennifer will be handling all of those and read them. Good morning, John. Are you here yet? Not quite. He's connecting, so it'll be any moment. We will start with Jennifer reading the roll, and she will take roll and do read all votes throughout the meeting this morning. Thank you, Jennifer.
Director Kwiatkowski?
Present.
Director Mora?
Present.
Director Armstrong? Director Edwards?
Edwards is here.
Director Swan?
Present.
Four directors present, with Director Armstrong currently absent.
Okay, we would like to approve the order of the agenda, please. Anyone have any comments?
So move.
I'm sorry, Bob.
I'll move to accept the order of agenda.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Okay. I don't know if that was Nancy or Spencer.
I got Nancy.
Okay. Any other comments or questions before we vote? Okay, all in favor? I'm sorry, Jennifer, this is your turn.
It's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Mora to approve the order of the agenda. I'll now record the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Yes.
Okay, the motion carries with 4 in favor and 1 absent.
I'm sorry, I maybe should have mentioned this before we approved that. We have an appointment item at 12:30, and we'll be taking a lunch break at 12. And wherever we are in the agenda, we will take our appointment at 12:30 and then go back to the agenda if need be. Do we have any public comments, Jennifer? They're open now.
Let me check email. Last time I checked, we did not have any.
Let me just clarify, we have comments. It's a little bit different than the county does it. And I think we have 2 county folks in attendance of this meeting. So we take comments by email, also in the chat within the Zoom meeting app. And also the board president will call for public comments, and you can just unmute yourself and make the comments, and we'll go. So I'm opening public comments if anyone has any comments that is on the line as well.
Thank you, Pete.
There's no email submissions for public comment, so if there's anybody who, and there's no chat submissions for public comments, if there's anybody on joining the meeting by phone, now would be the time to make your public comment.
Okay. Moving on, we're closing public comments now, and we're going to information items and proclamations, staff reports, and we have Travis here from the fire department, and Andy, who gets to speak today?
Good morning, this is Andy Murphy. Hi. Addressing that. Was that me?
That was you.
You're better now.
All right, I'll be addressing this fire report. You have to forgive me. I'm joining you from beautiful downtown Kalinga on the mineral incident, so I may have to cut out if it gets noisy in the room where I'm at, but I'll rejoin if I can. So for emergency response, there were several incidents where I think perhaps we could sign up some volunteers. As you'll see, that locals and passerbys have extinguished a few fires or knocked them down at least until the fire engine arrived. So there was some good action by locals to prevent some, you know, fires that were in very precarious positions on Priest Grade and out in some of the former areas. I don't know why that's doing that.
It's I just muted. I'm just for procedure, I'm going to mute the folks that are in the meeting that are not speaking at this point.
All right. That might have been me. Just feedback. Okay. So, and then additionally, there was a response for engine 781 up the Rainbow Pools for a possible drowning. Unfortunately, it ended up with the recovery with the Tuolumne Search and Rescue. Tragic incident that occurs all too frequently there. Additionally, a few vehicle accidents in different locations in and out of the district, some in the county area. And then, of course, now the CAL FIRE engines are both staffed. They're CAL FIRE funded there at the Groveland CAL FIRE station. As far as equipment report, all the equipment is serviced. One other thing I wanted to report on was that we did receive the surplus CAL FIRE engine, and it's a 1997 International CAL FIRE Model 15 Type 3 fire engine. As one of the items mentioned in the master plan update was procuring the Type 3 engine, and that has been, you know, we're achieving that. Should be in service this month. We're just waiting on a couple of decals, and we'll bring it up when it's ready. It's currently at the Altaville CAL FIRE shop. There was some work, more work than we thought that was needed, but it's in service and will function as the district's Type 3 fire engine. So that's good news.
Cool.
One of the items that's later on the agenda, but is currently we're working under the California Fire Foundation PG&E grant, and the county as well received this grant last year for defensible space inspectors for $15,000. The district hired two defensible space inspectors, and in the month of June completed 122 defensible space inspections within the district, starting in the Big Oak Flat area and working towards Groveland. So their primary function is to educate and inform the public about the requirements of Public Resources Code 4291, which is also known as the Defensible Space Program. So it encourages the community to do their clearance around their homes, and then if they're non-compliant, their inspections are forwarded up to CAL FIRE for further education and potentially enforcement action. So that's helping to make the community safe. Training, the monthly training continued. There were some changes in personnel with Captain Travis Chun now there being promoted within the station there from engineer to fire captain. As we've seen Kevin Seville, and this will also be talked about later in the meeting, transferring to the Madera, Mariposa, Merced unit. So, and then the vacancy for engineers should be filled rather shortly. And I think, so looking at the incident report, the district ran 50 incidents in the month of June. Four of those were auto aid to Tuolumne County. 46 of those were in district. So far this year, the district's had 273 incidents, compared to 286 last year. We've seen a slight decline pretty much everywhere with the COVID and lack or reduction of travelers and people out driving around and having problems. They've also seen some of that earlier on in the emergency rooms and hospitals with people just not wanting to go out. So that's that is occurring pretty much everywhere. And then you see, we added last month the GCSD instance for the month of June for the last 6 years, including this year. The little graph there at the bottom of the report just kind of shows a trend for the month, just to see where we're at compared to average. So we're pretty average. There was a spike in 2016, and that was countywide. Not quite sure where that originated from, but all in all, we're trending pretty similar to where we've been, but a little bit above the last 4 year average. And that is the end of my report.
I have a question, Andy, regarding the fire prevention defensible space inspectors. Do they report anything that they find regarding problem areas to the district, to the fire department, local?
No, okay. No. The inspections are sent out to the, if they need a re-inspection, they're sent a notice of correction to the property owner. And if they are non-compliant on the second inspection, then the information is forwarded to CAL FIRE.
Okay.
It's a state law, so that's kind of where that jurisdiction comes in for enforcement.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet.
And wanted to, yes, John. Well, hold on for a second. Go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
You're still muted, John.
I just wanted to congratulate Travis for his promotion.
Thank you very much.
And I think it's awesome that we're doing these inspections. They did my house, actually. So it's good.
Yeah, it's a good reminder of things that we can do that sometimes people overlook, you know, or they get too busy, and it's just a good, like I said, the purpose is education. It's not enforcement. We want folks to know what they need to do, and then to, you know, we give them some time to complete it. So it's a great program, and like I said, the county got the same grant 2 years in a row, and it's been doing the last couple of years. And it's just, and then the state also has folks who do it. They're seasonal, they're 9 month employees, and they do it. That's their job, 40 hours a week throughout the unit, Tuolumne and Calaveras unit, and then all around the state. And then also the engine companies do some of these inspections as well. So it's very important, of course, as we've seen in the last, especially over the last few years. So it's great that we're able to participate that in that.
So Travis, are you going to miss us? Are you going to another beautiful location?
It's Kevin that's leaving us.
I'm sorry. Kevin. Yes, Kevin.
Of course he's going to miss us.
He's muted. There he goes.
Yeah, I am, actually. This has been one of my more enjoyable assignments. I really enjoyed my time, and I enjoyed getting to know all of you folks and working with you. I am going to miss the place, but there's a lot of new opportunities where I'm going, so I'm looking forward to that, too.
Good. Great. Yes, John.
Thanks.
I didn't see you.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
I didn't see you were there, so congratulations on your move. And
thanks.
Thank you for your service.
Thanks. I'm happy to be there. Thanks for having me for the last couple of years. I enjoyed it.
Okay, any other director comments regarding this report? Okay, open comments to the public. Okay, Jennifer, do we have any?
Nope.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to item A2, General Manager's Report.
I'm going to unmute. Am I unmuted?
Yes.
Yes.
Good. All right. I just seem to never know. There were just a few items included in your report. That doesn't mean we didn't have an extremely busy period of time over the last month. There's been a lot going on all fronts, but a couple of things that are taking shape for the future right now that I think are worthy of discussion. One is this really interesting program that's being put out by FEMA, and it is the, I included a brochure in your packet about this Building Resilient Infrastructure in Communities grant. I'm going to attend a couple of different webinars on it and obviously be working with the county staff at OES to see what their thoughts are. This is a broad-based program that looks to transition communities like, you know, for example, Groveland, that's kind of an isolated island on top of the hill, into a more self-sustainable community in terms of planning and community capacity building. This might be an opportunity to fully integrate and outfit our CERT program, improve and modernize our communications, both internally and other technologies related to communications, like we talked about with broadband and some other things that we're finding we have weaknesses in when we look at developing our continuity plan, our plan to make sure that we have continuous services in the face of emergencies, pandemics, that type of stuff. We have an obligation to develop these plans. So we're looking at that. I thought I would include it. It's a very, I'm sure, an extremely complicated grant process. We would have to be a sub-recipient under the county in that, in the way that that works. So the other thing is the CSGA take action. I included that just because there was the primary focus of that item is that we worked really hard, and I'm sure Rachel remembers me stomping around the office when we first saw that the state budget had allocated money to cities and counties, but kind of forgot that special districts provide critical services as well. And the state budget provided money for cities and counties to do the PG&E power shutdowns, planning and infrastructure improvements to be more prepared for those. And so I talked to OES and they recommended, or talked to the state OES folks, and they recommended that we call the city and see if the city would allocate us some money, because they all assume that the city is, that everyone's within a city and that the city has some obligation to services. So, John, did you have a question? Sorry. You're muted.
John, turn on your speaker.
Sorry.
One more time.
On the planning for the PSPSs,
yeah,
they talk about us losing 911 on the landlines up here. Because I think people like us, where I live, we don't have cell service. And right. The only thing we have is landline. And when the PSPSs come, we don't have anything.
That's a good point. I think between the two of these programs, John, when you look at the FEMA Building Resilient Communities grant money and that program that they're trying to put an effort into, because they're tired of picking people up after there's already been a disaster. They really want people to think ahead, plan ahead, and implement some projects that they've never been able to do before. And then, you know, the state's recognition that special districts do provide critical services, that took a year to get them to realize that. But to your point specifically, I think that's a good topic of discussion with the county OES folks. You know, as we continue to plan going forward for our resilient community and all that. So I think it's a real opportunity to look at that. Maybe, John, things that it may be enhancing the technologies, the non-traditional technologies that we, they may not want to invest in the landline infrastructure anymore. It may be that they invest in other types of infrastructure to make sure that we can communicate.
AT&T's made that real obvious when I've talked to them on the phone about this problem. I've talked to them many, many times. They don't ever want to talk to me about it. They've made it real clear that they don't really care about landlines anymore. But I mean, for people like me and most of the people that live up by me, we do not have anything but that. We rely on that for our 911 and for everything. And you know, when I'm at home, my cell phone just, it doesn't work, you know? So they need to take care of it. I know there's got to be something in the health and safety code that makes them take care of it. All it is adding a generator. That's all it is. I've put a generator at my house. I expect them to do the same.
Yeah. Well, that sounds. We'll work through those as we do more planning on the PSPS. The specific reason for the CSDA being there was just to say that now there's going to be. The budget was approved with an allocation for districts as well, and that was the guidelines are being put together right now on how that's going to roll out. So I mean it was a big win during the middle of a big fiscal crisis. So CSDA was wonderful in helping us get that done. And we appreciate the county too because they did consider our request and had allocated some of their money for that we're going to be using on the tank four generator. The sewer project status, I'm really getting frustrated with the state. Just they keep moving the ball out. They just keep, you know, I really thought that when they said 2 months in early June that we'd be looking at having a contract by August, but now it's 5 to 6 months. And I don't know that, you know, they've assured me that the money is going to be available in this fiscal year budget, but that's about the best that I have. And that is the sewer project, the sewer collection system project in both, that's in Groveland, Big Oak Flat and Pine Mountain Lake. And I included a document just for your information, not that it made any sense to you, but it is the term sheet that's going to be attached to the contract. It's called credit review check sheet. And that is what the amount of the estimated project cost and the funding is approved for. We got a really good interest rate. It's gonna reduce the amount of the debt service costs that we had anticipated paying for that 25% loan that we have to get. And so, it's all looking good. The state's just got to get off the mark and get us a contract. So there's not a whole lot we can do to rush it along at this point. So that is, I don't know if I had anything else included in the packet, but I'll entertain any questions. We primarily, the last part of this month has been working on a potential tax measure for fire and working with the fire department folks on that and our various consultants to get that up and dialed in and staying, you know, keeping the staff healthy, keeping the staff excited about their job in the midst of everything that we have to do as employers. It's not quite what it was around January and February of this year. So anyway, any questions or comments?
Jennifer, any comments from the public? Anyone that's phoned in would like to say anything? Okay, we will close public comment and move on to this take action brief that you've put in here. It's really informational. It's kind of cool.
Those could be something received by from Neil. They might up in your junk mail, so you may want to check. If not, you can send an email to Dane at CSDA or contact me and I'll get you where you receive these. They are really good. They come out as needed, and also minimum a quarterly, and have a lot of good information.
Okay, we're going to move on to the operations.
Remind me. So,
oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Bob.
I just because my brain doesn't always retain these things as well as it ought to. The water project, we already knew that wasn't going to happen. Is it not even next fiscal year, or is it all the way out? I mean, is it all the way out into 21?
Collection or the distribution system project that we applied to the state and then subsequently have applied now through the county through the CDBG program. It's basically the same. It's the same project. It's just we don't know if we're ever going to get a contract with the state because the state has they have a priority ranking based on health and safety, and these are considered other system defects. They don't consider fire flow and all of that as a health and safety matter in the water system. So the state is unknown. The state definitely said there's going to be no action on any type of contract in this fiscal year, the 2021. The application for community development block grant has been submitted, except it's not finalized, like we talked about at the last board meeting, until the county auditor has completed a federal single audit that gets submitted. And that deadline for that single audit has been extended out. So the county's working within that extended deadline, but at the same time, they can't accept the CDBG application until that's finalized. So that's where we are on that project. It would be, we've got a large request in for CDBG, and we certainly hope there's carryover money because it's waiting in line, audit, and then it can be done. It's not our audit, it's the county's single audit.
So they are actually making some efforts to accomplish that, as far as you know? I mean, the last time we talked, it was like nobody seemed to be doing anything.
Well, they were, they're waiting on their auditor. And also the deadline has been moved out a couple of times and now is in September. But a conversation last week with Debbie Bautista at the county, she said that they were they were pretty close to having it done. And so it may be, I would expect it anytime.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we will move on to the operations report. Louie, are you here?
I am. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
All right. Well, June was extremely busy for staff here. I'm going to go ahead and jump right into the distribution part of it here. We had 3 service leaks. They were able to go out and take care of. They actually had 3 hydrants that were, one was hit by a car, the other just broke in the middle of the night, and then the fire department found one that wasn't operating properly out on Bigfoot Circle. So the guys had to repair all 3 of those. The projects, we've had quite a few moving forward. We had the LS16 sewer line replacement with the new manhole. That project has been completed. We had the park manhole refabbed and a brand new one put in by Moyle Construction on both those projects, and they did a great job. The building project kind of started in June. They started bringing in some equipment, scaffolding and stuff, to get all the buildings painted and repaired with new windows and new doors and all that. So that's been happening as well. And then staff's actually moved forward with GIS of all the hydrants and valves and the unit 4 and 5 area, which is huge for us. Again, it's going to make life a lot easier for everybody. So with all that, that was quite a bit going on for the month of June. And then, anybody got any questions?
Louis, can you address the your odor response? You have that in your report, yep. But that has, I just want to make sure that everybody knows that we were ready in advance and been taking action.
Yeah, I was going to hit that up here at the end. But yes, you can see that in there. Staff, we take the sewer odor complaints really seriously. And this year we tried to head them off by having outside contractor come in and hit our main hub stations. The guys, you know, they go out weekly already and do odor control and all that with the systems. Every station that puts off any kind of odor while they're out there, they dose those, but mainly that's the main hubs that really give us the problem. And so the guys are out doing that. We're pumping down the stations a lot more, trying to turn over the force mains. We've actually started adding odor degreasers and odor bands to certain manholes at breakovers. And just trying to get ahead of this. And we started this in May ahead of, you know, Memorial Day weekend there. And that's kind of the kickoff of the whole summer season for us here in Groveland. And so, and even Greg, he's kept that E-basin at a lower level with that way the air is, you know, adequate and it's turning over and constantly aerating that thing at a more rapid pace. And so we've done all these things. The only thing that we can't control is the weather temperature. And it's started off about upper 70s and May was the average temperature for the month. And then we kind of went into June and hit about 85 as an average. And already in July, we're almost at a 90. So I think that's a big factor. And I know everybody says it's with this COVID thing going on that it's really slow in town, but still it might not be as crazy as it was in the past, but still we've had to upflow to about 120 and Greg can take it up to probably about 140 if he really wanted to. So, but we're trying, we're out there trying to make this stuff happen and take these odor complaints away, but it's hard. It's, sewer's a stinky business and we've tried our best and we've got new products and so I think we did very well since May. Like I said in my report, we've only had four odor complaints come in. Two of them were just isolated events. One was at a lift station and the other was a manhole in the backyard. So the guys were able to go out, handle those complaints and actually talk to the property owners. They were able to fill out their odor investigation forms. And that just helps them out knowing, hey, what time of day it was, what's the temperature, where's the wind coming from, was it really the manhole or was it the lift station? And so these guys could break that down and actually give us a pretty good idea. Yes, it was kind of an isolated event. The other two complaints weren't really brought to our attention so where we can go out and investigate. It was just more so somebody leaving an email. And so we didn't get that until Monday morning. And so but we were able to know that general area has always had the complaint from the Freddie Road and maybe lift station 7 and the plant together as a culprit in that. But yeah, we're trying to, you know, head this out every weekend. We go out and we do a little extra on some of those plants or some of those stations and trying to head it off. But we still get a couple of those complaints that come through.
Upcoming work on the headworks. I'm hoping that will resolve a lot of the odor from the plant.
It's gonna resolve some, but not all.
Right. So. Some is wonderful.
Yep.
Okay. Any questions from the directors? Any public comment, Jennifer?
No.
Any comment from anyone that has phoned in? Okay, we will go to item. Thank you, Louie. We will go to item 4, Administrative Service Manager's Report.
Okay, I don't really have a whole lot to report just because most of everything that we do in admin ends up showing up on the agenda anyways. So, a lot of what we've been working on, Pete has included, like with regard to the COVID response and the office reopening and the protocol that was put in place and measures for that, which I had put together a memo for staff that I copied the board or sent to the board as well as copied them the link to our website for the protocol for members of the public entering the office. So far, feedback from staff is that it's going pretty well. We were actually really busy on the first day that the office reopened, which was a little surprising. It was almost busier than we are traditionally when we're not in a COVID pandemic. But things seem to be going pretty smooth. A lot of people are still paying and doing things like a contact. Am I echoing? Just me, that's
stuttering.
We have tax roll on the agenda for today, which Rachel's been working on. So if that gets passed, we will issue that to the county. We've also been in a couple of meetings with some vendors. One of them is Laserfish, which is something the district's been looking at for quite some time. It's like a document management software program that is would be really, really wonderful for the district to implement. And would allow complete electronic digital archiving of all of the district's records, as well as having a means through our website where members of the public could do a search for district documents. So as far as like public records requests goes, it would we don't get a whole lot anyways, but this would just allow the members of the public to access many of our documents without having to utilize a staff member. They could just do searches through our website. And then the other thing that we are starting to work on after the approval of the budget is the Springbrook implementation. We have Rachel who's reaching out to Springbrook to set up a call with them to start getting the logistics of doing that migration over. When we had migrated previously with the last version, it was pretty involved and we had to go down for 2 days in the office while they transitioned everything over. So that is the next thing that we are working on to get implemented. So lots of stuff going on, lots of features to make us more efficient that we've been looking at, especially with COVID going on right now. So that's my report.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any comments or questions with the directors? Yes, Spence.
Yeah, it just took me a second to unmute. You know, the fire department is really busy. Maintenance, you know, they're out there slugging it out with lift stations and flushing lines, and they've got this great schedule that they use. Ops is the same way. They're working real well together. Admin is tying it all together, and all this with the COVID pandemic. You guys, the leadership in the district and the staff in the district is working above and beyond, and I'm really proud of the work that you guys are doing. You're making life real easy for an old guy like me sitting up here as a director because of all the work you guys do. And don't think it's not going, it's noticed. It's noticed by us and it's noticed by the people on the street. You guys haven't missed a lick during this pandemic. I'm really proud of you guys, all of you. Pass that on to the staff too, because the guy down there on the end of that shovel, he needs to get that too.
Very much appreciated.
I agree 100% with Spencer.
I obviously think you're all doing a pretty good job with the remote working and everything. On the office reopening, has it dropped off? I was curious as to whether people were going to come in. I know there was a little bit of pent-up demand for the first opening, but has it remained high? I mean, do we get 5 people a day or what?
I haven't checked with staff at the end of last week to see what their numbers were, but I know it had slowed down. So I can get back to you with that.
No, I was just curious. So it has I would assume that most people would be, since they don't have to come in to do most things, that they wouldn't be doing it just because they are.
Yeah, I thought so too. That's why I was really surprised that our Monday of our reopening was so busy.
Backlog for people that wanted to join the dog park.
Yeah.
Okay, any public comments?
Not seeing any.
Okay, any comments from anyone that's phoned in? Okay, we will move on to item B, 3B, proclamations. Pete.
I'm gonna, I am unmuted, good, okay. I'm gonna jump through this really quickly, just that we've got a, we've got an opportunity on our agenda to be able to do just as Spencer and John and all of the directors have done in the past, and that is to recognize employees for their years of service and their accomplishments. And we are in the process of coming up with an internal system to be able to convey that, so that whether that recognition or proclamation comes from management in a public setting such as this, or whether it comes, it would be more appropriate for a board member to present it, or a manager. However it works, this is would be our opportunity to take action on those types of things and publicly recognize all this good work, because it's really amazing. We're in a remote situation and hitting on all cylinders. It really feels pretty exciting, because we're getting so much work done. But the purpose of this was, we've got a resolution on the agenda that would be the resolution for Captain Seville, and so I can read that, or Janice, you can read it, or maybe we can, if Andy's still around, he can read it. It's very short and sweet. Or maybe we can have Travis do it. But anyway, just wanted to recognize everybody for all the good work that they're doing. We did include a list that has, basically, it has anniversaries and accomplishments related to certifications. We are going to formalize that going forward, so that it's a presentation, a small, quick, concise presentation about this information, rather than just a list of anniversaries. So we just wanted to make sure that we got Kevin in here before he went south on us, and also to recognize Travis for moving up, so much appreciated. I look over here to this screen. Janice, would you like to read this? Would you like to read it, or the resolution for?
Yeah, I'll read it. Resolution 31-2020, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Groveland Community Service District commending Fire Captain Kevin Seville for his efforts and accomplishments while serving the Groveland Fire Department. Whereas Kevin's priority was to provide the highest level of service to the public, and whereas with this in mind, he advanced many programs while at Station 78, and whereas he started our grant writing program, which allowed us to receive funds for numerous projects, including the new SCBAs and SCBA bottle filling station, and more advanced turnouts, and whereas he made sound decisions on emergencies, which ultimately saved lives and property in the Groveland area, and whereas Kevin is a true firefighter at heart, and we wish him well with his next step in his career. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Directors of the Groveland Community Service District does hereby extend the appreciation of this board to Kevin Seville for his excellent public service provided to the community, and for showing the knowledge, skills, experience, and drive that this is the model of cultural excellence in which we strive at GCSD. Thank you, Kevin, from the Board of Directors and all of GCSD.
I move to approve Resolution 31-2020, commending Fire Captain Kevin Seville for his efforts and accomplishments while serving the Groveland Fire Department.
And I second that motion.
OK, Okay, thank you. Any other comments from directors?
Thank you, Kevin.
Any public comment?
Yeah, this is Murph, Assistant Chief again. I just wanted to congratulate Kevin on his transfer. He certainly has been a leader in the fire service in Tuolumne County for a long period of time. And we'll certainly miss you, and thank you for your dedication truly to not just the community, but also your crew, and wish you the best of luck.
Travis, did you want to say something?
Oh, I just wanted to say congratulations to Kevin. Very happy to see him, pursue his goals in the fire service. And I'm very excited for this opportunity to try my hand at this position.
I'd say something. I want to thank Kevin. It's been a real pleasure working with him. And he really, I think one of the things that Kevin really changed with our fire department is he really changed the dynamic of the way the Cal Fire firefighters come in. You know, rather than just coming to serve as personnel at our station, he really gets the firefighters to buy into the Groveland community and be our firefighters, not just stationed here temporarily as personnel. And that's really changed. The fire department's changed drastically under Kevin in the last 2 years with regard to that. And I know that Travis is going to do an excellent job because he's been with us for, I believe, since 2014. And I know he's going to carry that going forward. So thanks, Kevin. We're going to miss you. And Travis, we're really excited to have you as well.
I'm going to say congratulations to both of you guys.
Thank you.
Congratulations from me as well. Look forward to working with you, Travis and Kevin. It's been a pleasure. It's really, again, to echo what Jen said about making it really feel like a home fire department versus a contracted department. You know, I mean, it was always a pleasure to have you be at the board meetings and interact with us and you got a lot done with the grants and everything else. It really made it a wonderful experience. It's just like having family down the street doing the whole thing, you know? So it's very recognized and much appreciated, and good luck in your future. And you do well. Big things.
I'll add my congratulations to both of you, and also just want to ask, we do have the grant writing covered, right, with somebody else, because that's been really pretty successful over the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be heading up that program now for our station, and I've been working on them with Kevin the whole time, so we're in a good spot.
And stay safe, Kevin, with your travels and your new career down there.
I will. I was going to take the vote if we're ready. Okay. It has been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Edwards, to approve Resolution 31-2020 commending Fire Captain Kevin Seville for his efforts and accomplishments while serving the Groveland Fire Department. And I'll call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora? Did we lose Nancy? Oh, she's there. Okay. Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
And the motion carries unanimously.
So before we leave this agenda item, just on the on the page of the packet that has the proclamations related to the district employees and board members. We've got, you can see we've got a couple of employees that have a little bit under their belt with the district, and close to a decade and over, and that's quite an accomplishment in Groveland. We had a complete turnover, and all new staff around the time that Jennifer and Louie came in, and really want to we'll get into them at a future meeting, and get more information on the accomplishments that they've put up for the district. But the we've got John Armstrong and Bob Swan on the board for John for in excess of two terms, and Bob almost the just passing 7 years. So that is absolutely fantastic. It's great to have board continuity, that's for sure. And so you can see we've got a number of employees with a few years racking up, and we hope to keep them around and keep them loving their job and loving their community. And so it's hard to pick any single person out here and put them over the other one, but that I didn't want that to go unsaid, that we'll continue to do a more detailed recognition at upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Pete. We will now move on to the consent calendar. Do we have any comments, questions from the directors?
Well, I did have one question which I had sent to Pete, and he's already answered it, but since I was going to ask it, I'll ask it anyhow, which was with respect to the impact fee study. I just wanted to get an idea of what the range of the bids was. But I guess we haven't actually looked at the pricing yet, so there is no answer to that, so I understand.
I would like to pull out item F, which is page 45, to discuss outside of the consent calendar. So I'd like to go ahead and approve the consent calendar.
Did you want to move that to discussion after the consent calendar, Janice?
Yes, please.
I move to approve the consent calendar, but removing F for further discussion.
Second that.
Any public comment?
No.
Okay. Jennifer, you can take the vote, please.
It's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Swan, to approve the consent calendar with the removal of item F for further discussion. I will call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously.
Okay, thank you. Item F, reject all bids submitted for the Groveland Community Service District pavement rehabilitation project. In this item, there was a call to have the bids resubmitted. I would like to postpone that at this time and perhaps work on getting the admin office up to speed as far as spacing, whatever needs to be done to get the employees back with adequate areas to work, along with hallways and things like that. Pete, do you have anything to say about that?
Unmute. Let me unmute. Yeah, that's we've had this conversation. It's a little bit separate from the rejection of bids. I think we'll take that item, you know, the rejection of bids, and then as a vote of the board, and then the discussion of what the future holds and rebidding it. I will bring it back to the board for authorization to go to bid. And at that time, we can have a discussion about priorities and alternatives, if that works out okay for the board. Because the project is what it is, and we can get revised plans and specifications ready to go, set it on a shelf if that's the pleasure of the board, if we have other priorities to move forward with. And what Janice is talking about is what we'll talk about a little bit more when we get to the report on COVID. So the motion would be related to rejection of bids at this point, and we'll have it on the agenda for discussion of administrative project priorities.
I think that's how, I mean, all we're really doing at this point is voting to reject all the bids. I mean, I think we need to have, this is another question I had for Pete, but that we need to have a reconsideration perhaps of what the cost of this project, the pavement project, is really going to be based on the contractors that we actually have available to do the work. It's still, as you've pointed out, Pete, in the past, lots of times, this is one of those things where we don't really want to put this off too much more, or the longer we wait, the more the subsurface structure goes to hell and it becomes more expensive to do the repair in the future. But right now, I think we're just talking about rejecting the bids formally.
Yes. And I'll just confirm that if the bids are rejected per the recommendation, that we won't go out to bid until we bring the issue back up before the board.
I'd like to see some different numbers, probably.
Well, with two thrown out, we only have one number to consider. So yes, we will.
I meant from our engineer, our expectation of what this was going to cost was a turn.
Okay, so we will call a vote on this. Jennifer, please, to reject the bids.
I'll move that we reject all the bids for the pavement reconstruction project.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Krakowski, to reject all bids received for the pavement rehabilitation project. I will now call for the vote. Director Krakowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong? Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously.
Did we have any public comment on that? I don't know that we called for public comment. I don't, when we pulled it off, it changed the order and changed the process a little bit.
Yes, any public comments, Jennifer?
No.
Any comments from anyone that has phoned in?
Can I chime in for a second? I kind of missed my opportunity.
Yes, Kevin.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not so good at the Zoom meetings. As I said before, board meetings aren't necessarily my forte. But I just wanted once again, say, you know, I appreciate all the kind words. I really did enjoy working at the Groveland Fire Department. Everything that I tried to do there was all experimental, you know, so I'm glad everybody liked what I was trying to do with the place. And as far as Travis taking my spot, it's the best case scenario. He was there with me the whole time working on everything that we were achieving in that station together. So should be a seamless transition with Travis. You guys are in good hands and should have a nice long, bright future for that place with the way things are going. So again, thanks for the kind words. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you guys accepting me. And we'll see you in the future somewhere.
Thank you, Kevin. We're going to miss you.
Yeah, I'm going to miss all you too. I'll miss the weather. It's a little hot down in the valley, but that's okay.
Okay, thank you. We will close public comment and now move on to old business. We don't have any, so let's move on past that and go right to the discussion items. We will now open the public hearing. The district will conduct a public hearing to receive public comment and input for the placement of delinquent charges for the fiscal year 2019-2020 on property tax rolls. Do we have any?
I'll have Jennifer give a quick staff report on that, just summarizing what was in the packet and the purpose of this action. Then we'll open the public hearing for public comment. And then once we've received the comment, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the board for action.
Okay, so I'm pretty sure, yes, definitely the board has been through this before several times for several members. This is our opportunity annually where we have delinquent balances on utility accounts. And we file this report with the county, and it allows us to place these delinquencies on property tax rolls. So if people are not... if people, you know, aren't paying their bills, but they're paying their property taxes, we can recoup the money in this manner. So the public hearing must be held, and that's what we're doing today. We publish this with all the delinquents, with the amount of the delinquencies and the parcels subject to having a lien placed against them and being put on the property tax roll on June 27th. And we also mailed notices to the specific property owners informing them of this as well, their delinquent amount, and of today's public hearing on June 25th, 2020. So right now is the opportunity for anybody who's on the tax roll to make a public comment or protest. The board can remove anybody if they feel the need to, or we finalize the report and then that is then issued to the county.
Okay, do we have any objections or protests from the public regarding this?
I have not received any emails and there's nothing in the chat box.
Okay, any comments from any phone-in members?
Just want to make sure looking at the numbers and the folks that are participating in this meeting, I think we have mostly county folks in recognizing the numbers and the names, but want to make sure that if there's anyone here that is attending the meeting for the placement of the delinquent charges on the property tax roll during this public hearing, now is the time to make a comment or raise a concern. Okay, looks like you can unmute yourself if you are here, you can do it yourself by checking unmute. All right, I think we're
move to approve resolution 32-2020 approving the report of unpaid charges and delinquencies for the fiscal year 2019-20 and authorizing staff to file the report and resolution with the Tuolumne County Auditor on or before August 1st, 2020 to collect the delinquent charges.
Second.
Okay, with no objections or protests from the property owners, we will close the public hearing and take a vote.
It's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Swan to approve Resolution 32-2020, approving the report of unpaid charges and delinquencies for fiscal year 2019-2020 and authorizing staff to file the report and resolution with the Tuolumne County Auditor on or before August 1st, 2020 to collect the delinquent charges. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong? Director Swan?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Director Edwards says aye.
Motion carries unanimously.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to item 6B, page 51 in the packet. Consideration of providing direction on a potential special tax measure for the November 2020 ballot to address revenue for the Groveland Fire Department.
Well, I would imagine to say that that is why we have good participation today from county staff. And I'm not sure who else is on the line, but very much appreciated to see interest in our board meeting, because we have these matters before the board quite a bit, and we do spend a bunch of time making sure that we clearly articulate what's going on and are very well prepared to make decisions. In this particular case, this is a very rapidly evolving situation, in that the for well over a year, the county and the fire chiefs throughout the county have been discussing the revenue needs for the fire department and the need for some type of funding measure to be able to keep everyone whole. As you know, with taxes post Prop 13 and Prop 218, there is a significant amount of scrutiny when it comes to when a measure goes on the ballot and what people will say and do and their thoughts on it. And we have all come to agreement among the fire chiefs, the district managers, and the county staff that any measure that had everyone in lockstep together saying the same thing, talking about the need for replacing equipment, the need to fund staff, the need to fund safety equipment and supplies, training, fire prevention and safety activities, and replace equipment is paramount to the safety, health and safety of the community going forward. And the more unite we can be on it, the better it is a possibility of success, because for a special tax measure, we would need to get a two-thirds positive vote at the ballot, which is a very, very difficult task in our community, in most rural communities of the state of California. It's a grueling process. It's expensive to go through the election, to prepare the analysis, to do everything that we have to do to get it up and ready before it goes to the voters. It was intended that GCSD was going to go out early on a measure on our own, and we had intended to do that. And it took us, luckily, the drain on our fire fund was not as significant as we had planned, which basically bought us an additional year. Not that we're waiting for, want to go to the end of that year, but we knew we'd be able to survive an extra year from earlier predictions, which gave us a little bit more time to plan a funding measure. And also at that time allowed us to be able to go in with the county instead of going out in advance of the county. So we backed off a little bit. We got our special tax consultant on board. We were working with them, had the draft community surveys prepared, ready to go out on the street to have, to get some feedback and input from our public in Groveland to know what they knew about the situation, how willing they would be to support it and at what level of a measure would be successful. We were just ready to launch it when we got hit between the eyes with this whole COVID-19 situation. And that really changed our world and really made it a situation where we weren't sure whether we would have success just due to the economic downturn and how that was going to impact voters' opinions. And you just really don't want to put it out on the street, have it fail, try it again, have it fail. You really get a black mark and it's hard to get it done. So we wanted to make sure it was successful. So we backed off in March, figuring about now we would, well, we figured it would be earlier, but you never knew what we were going to see during that period of time. This became a current item and a very urgent item when the county proposed to move forward with a measure, and that occurred just in the last 2 weeks. That went before the Board of Supervisors, and at that time they approved moving forward with a measure that dealt with the TOT tax and putting that back on the ballot, as well as a special tax for fire. And that was directed to move forward at that time with the November ballot. I'm having communication back and forth with Tracy Riggs, County Administrator, by email. We missed each other this morning, and I could have some current information that I know that Tracy will share with us when we get to it. But the county board is again taking this matter up just because we've had significant conversations with county staff and also with the fire chiefs to try to figure out whether November was doable, how we would structure it, how the ballot would be put together and everything else. And basically, since this is the first time the board has heard about it since we were going to do it out on our own, and that the timeline has at least until tomorrow's county board special meeting, the timeline has been expedited to be looking at the November ballot. I wanted to get this before our board just to make sure that we had agreement that if it was going to proceed, if the county was going to proceed, that we would schedule the appropriate meetings to be able to adopt the resolution and or ordinance to get the special tax on the ballot at the same time as the county. So that's, I know that was a lot of air, a lot of discussion, covered a lot of ground, but I'm open to any questions, and also I'm sure we've got some significant input from the county staff as well. The county had proposed it, or at this time the Board of Supervisors had moved forward with a $150 per developed parcel, $75 for each mobile homes and vacant lots. Pretty traditional methodology, easy to understand at a level that in my thoughts should be, we could gain support for. Anything less than that is not something major is going to have to give within the GCSD fire. In other words, if we, in reality, our calculations show that we need between 130 and 200 $130 per parcel to $200 per parcel. $200 per parcel being that we continue to fund the amateur agreement at 100%, as we have the Schedule A agreement at 100%, as we have, and the and include an equipment replacement fund where we would replace, be able to replace apparatus over time that are all approaching that time. And the $130 level, something else has got to give. We'd have to back off on either the equipment replacement in total or the amateur agreement in total. So the $150 level gets us in between the two. And if we can work out some other details to get that closer to a, you know, $200 per parcel amount of revenue that we need to keep it going, that would be ideal. So I'll stop now and entertain questions, and then we can pull the county staff in.
Yes, any questions from the directors or comments? Yes, John.
The only problem is that we need to pass one, if we can, that takes care of, you know, new equipment and the whole nine yards, or we're never going to get out of this. I mean, we're in a tight spot here. Engines aren't getting cheaper.
Yeah, I totally get that, no doubt.
So I had sent Pete a question about this as well, because I'm, aside from the question of whether or not the $150 is satisfactory for our needs, I'm very concerned about trying to do this on such a short time frame. You know, the good news about doing it in November is it's going to be a big turnout election, so a whole lot of people voting. Maybe that's good news. At least people will be paying attention to it. But, you know, it doesn't allow, you know, we're not allowed, once we put this thing on the ballot, and it's the same thing for the county, we cannot promote it. So, I mean, it requires having, you know, building up a significant ground, grassroots kind of effort to support this. And I'm worried that November is not going to work. Now, Pete, in response to my question, mentioned something that the county feels that we need to have all of the agencies in the area to do ballot initiatives at the same time, and because of some court decision. And I was wondering if Tracy or somebody might explain to me what that is in a little more detail.
I will open it up to them in a moment. Was there any other comments from directors before we open it to the public?
I have a hard time going in with every. I mean, I think it's good in some ways to go in with everybody, but if we're not getting enough money out of it, why are we doing this? I mean, we need to get enough money to run our fire department or make some choices here. You know, our community is going to have to make some choices. They need to fund this department if they want to keep it the same, or the, you know, I just don't understand, you know, and I'm with Bob. I think it's kind of quick. We haven't had time to prepare our constituents for anything to get them ready for this. You know, they need to understand what's going on with the fire department.
Okay, this isn't the first time that we've talked about the fire department fund being low. So if anybody, I mean, it's been discussed for a couple of years very frequently recently. So let's now open it to Tracy, please. Welcome, Tracy Riggs from the county. Pete, you're...
Hello, I got you. I should be unmuted now. Let's look for anyone from the county that can speak to this matter. And it shows that Tracy and Eric are on. I'm not sure the other numbers, if they're related to the county or not, but there are two other phone numbers. But we're looking for some input on what, if you can unmute yourself and come in and have a conversation with us, that'd be fantastic.
Tracy just sent a chat message saying that unfortunately we can't hear her. So she's with us, but we can't hear her.
Sorry.
This is just great.
I'm trying to see if there's another way to get her in. Oh, so that would be, I'm not sure exactly how she got in. Is there anyone else from the county that can join in and give an update? Eric, I don't know if who else is on.
Well,
Can Tracy just call you, Pete, on, you know, phone to phone, and you could have a
speaker? If you can hear me, I'll put you, good workaround. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, sorry, I was just going to, I am here. Unfortunately, I have not been in office recently, nor have I touched base with Tracy on this. I was, so it looks like she's tried to log in from the phone. So unfortunately, this, I don't have anything really to add, but I am here and listening.
Okay, good deal. Thank you. I'll, Tracy, if you can hear me, I could try calling you on the, Jennifer, if you could respond to that and have her just call me by cell, and then I can hold the phone up and we can.
Yes, for whatever reason, her name is the only one that has nothing, like no phone, no camera, no microphone next to it.
Yeah, she might have used a phone to log in based on the one of the numbers that
Okay, so you want me to respond to the chat to have her
call me on my cell phone?
Okay, I think she can probably hear us, but I will send the message.
This is a good workaround.
Do you think that the county's willing to raise that number up? To, I mean, I just cannot see us going for something that doesn't do do it for us. Do you think they would be willing to raise the number up?
Hey, hang on. Thanks, Tracy. Sorry about all this.
I am logged in through the phone, so I don't know why it won't let me speak through it, so it's muted.
Okay, but you are, can the board members hear Tracy? They're shaking their head, so if you can see them, I'm not sure if you can hear me okay as well.
Yes, I can see everyone. I can hear you. And just so you know, I also have Debbie Batista here with me, since she runs our elections. So she is here in case you have any questions for her as well. So yes, tomorrow at 9 o'clock, we have a special board meeting where the board will consider two revenue measures. One is TOT.
May lose her.
Will come back as $150 per parcel and for improved and $75 for unimproved parcels. As to the question about whether I think that the board will increase that amount, if you had listened into that board meeting, you would have heard their concern that they thought that was too high.
Right.
So with that being said, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of concern for both measures, and I would encourage you, if you support one or either both of them, that you would reach out to them and or participate tomorrow during the special board meeting.
Absolutely.
And then Debbie was just saying that the other districts who put on a ballot measure don't have to have the same amount as we have. I think you probably know that. So if your board wanted to consider the $200 per parcel, as you've been discussing, you could do that. The only ones it looks like, I think we may only have two or three districts, maybe two districts in the city of Sonora who are considering putting a ballot measure on. But I haven't had a final conversation, and of course the final will be what makes it to Debbie. And the cutoff date, of course, is August 7th by 5:00 p.m. She has to have the resolutions and ballot measure language, or just the resolutions at that point? Okay, so that she needs the resolutions by Friday, the 7th at 5:00.
That sounds like a big task, but it's doable. It's absolutely necessary. That is pretty much the topic of this discussion today, as far as getting the direction to move forward, similar to what you did, I believe it was last week, in getting the direction to kick it off. And the good thing is we do have a consultant on board that can help us with the ballot language and evaluating the options. It's just, you know, their recommendation from the beginning has been that we slow down. And that we, you know, we look to get some public input before we set the final measure, just to be a little bit better at assuring success going forward. And I'm just going to address some of the concerns that were raised with going forward quickly, and why we would be going out at the same time with with the county, even if we went out with a higher amount. Let's just say we went out with the 200 versus 150, if that's where the county went. It gets a little bit confusing to the public when they see ballot measure after ballot measure going on, and it's just that it was a powerful voice, I thought, to have us all saying the same thing that we intended to do and needed to do in our goals and objectives for this measure, and you know, maybe even accountability and reporting and you know, what our plans were for the future as a united front versus fractured. I know that's a big a big challenge given the short time and some, you know, small districts. So
Pete, I guess I'm surprised, and I think you've heard me say this, I don't feel like we're moving quickly. We've been talking about this since I stepped into this role. We did a special board meeting at the tribe on this issue. We had a lot of conversation. We had some of our fire chiefs who participated. I also went to a fire chief meeting, I think you were there, Pete, last year, where I kind of challenged the fire chiefs in the room to tell the county, meaning not just us, but also the district boards, what was their priority and what did they think as the experts in the field that we all needed to move towards. You may remember they all said, yes, you know, one unified fire department district, whatever that looks like. I also challenged them to come up with that. We talked about a revenue measure, but I also said at that time that we, the county, could not continue to wait for all of these other districts to get in the order to be able to do a ballot measure. And it has been well over a year since I had that last conversation. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like this is a new conversation. I don't feel like it's rushed. Whether or not, obviously, it is better if we can all come in as united front always. That's always my preference. But if we can't, we all, those of us who are offering these services, and especially when we're looking at reducing services, we can't keep waiting. We all have equipment that needs replaced. We know that fire is the number one priority, not only for our community, but I think for each of our respective boards. And we need to start moving on some action so that we can do what is necessary to provide fire protection in our county as a whole.
Yes, John.
Well, my problem is that why are we doing this if it doesn't fully address our problems? And I just cannot see going forward with something that does not fix the problem. It might put a little patch on the problem for a short time, but if it doesn't cover us replacing our engines and everything that we need to do, then it's not good for us, as far as I'm concerned. I'm sorry, but I just cannot see voting for this if it doesn't cover everything we need.
John, let me just make sure that I'm clear, because I covered the amount that the county had approved and the amount that we've determined in our initial calculations that we need. But certainly it would be appropriate for the board to direct us to develop the measure based on an agreed upon budget that does those very things. And we have all of that data that can be presented at our first meeting, you know, that where we consider this item, because I think we'll probably have two more meetings related to it. And we can have a different amount on the ballot. The only risk there is we don't want a controversy over the fact that we're at 200 and let's say the county comes in at half of that ultimately, or 150 and we're at 200. Why is Groveland different? That's the only thing is I'm just a little bit concerned. And Tracy, by short timeline, I just mean from the time of action to move forward to now. I know I totally agree. We've had plenty of time to put this together. But I need to let you know that we can have a different amount. We just have to be prepared to address it. And, you know, it really could be just the number of parcels that, you know, the county serves a larger area, but they've got more parcels to draw from. So that $150 generates a lot more revenue than does the small number of parcels within Groveland. So you can take action to direct those things and have a different amount.
John, I want to point out that we as directors of this district cannot let this pass. We don't want to fall that much farther behind in our reserves. We've got to try to get what we can get, because it's only going to help the fire department and help the district and help the community, which is what we're trying to do. So to not vote for this, to not approve it, I think would take a step backwards.
My thought is it's going to be a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow, because, you know, they already complain about the cost of the water and sewer and all that stuff. But I just can't imagine anyone who lives here not being willing to fork out, you know, the extra money to potentially save your home. You know, the money that you'd pay for that would be what you'd pay for replacing your jeans if they all burned up in a fire. You know, I mean, it's going to have to be presented well and, you know, talked up by a lot of people. But just in the big scheme of things, I just can't imagine people being against it. But I'm well aware there will be people who are against it.
Yes, Spencer.
Yeah, just so that I get this straight, the county is going to ask for $150 per parcel, and GCSD needs $200 per parcel to maintain the fire department. Is that correct? Am I correct in saying that? Is that what we're shooting for?
The $150 is what was directed by the county board in a prior meeting. They're going to consider that again tomorrow. Okay, that's what Tracy was addressing. The amount that the district needs is something we should take up in a board meeting, because we've got the calculations. 200 is a rounded number, and it's also based on whether we if we move forward with the exact method that the county is proposing or has proposed already, with the full amount of the measure for residential single family parcels or for parcels, developed parcels, and then half of that for undeveloped parcels and mobile homes. Let's say we the consultant that we're working with says that's fine, we go forward with that. That drives one calculation at the end. But if we use a different formula, through legal counsel and other things with dynamic of our district, they propose something different, then that calculation would come out differently. When we had an assessment before in 2012, we used, I believe it was 3,350 parcels was single family household equivalents at that time. And that number would come out different. So it just depends on the methodology. It's going to be likely somewhere between $150 and $200 would be our measure.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, John.
The thing is if we're not able to keep the Amador program and keep the two engines, people are going to see, they might not even be able to get insurance up here. And the insurance is going to skyrocket way more than $200 a year per person up here. And that's what scares me about, okay, we're going to put it on the ballot in November. We haven't had a chance to go out and make the case in our district. I mean, we've been talking about it for a long time, but you know, I haven't seen a lot of people at the meetings and stuff, you know, and back when we had our biggest meetings were when we were talking about the fire department. And if we can't keep the Amador program and the fire department the way it is right now, we're all going to be paying more than $200 a year more in insurance. I can guarantee that. I can, if you can get insurance up here. So we're barely hanging on to that type of stuff right now with the fire department we have. So, I mean, it, I hate to tell you this. I love our fire department. They work hard, but three people on an engine is standard, even more now. The response times and stuff like that, you know, 5 minutes is normal response time. We have way big, longer response times, you know. So, I mean, we really have to sit down and think about this.
Okay, that's what we're doing right here. And I think that if the county's going to have it on the ballot, I mean, this is a big election coming up. If we waited another 2 years for the next election, how many voters are we going to get? I mean, the importance of the fire department with everybody's fire insurance going up now, they're well aware of what's happening with prices and what the community needs to be safe. Just having a fire department parked at the corner doesn't mean anything. I think we need to go ahead and take a vote on this. And I'd like to make a motion that we consider a consideration of providing the direction on the potential special tax measure for the November 2020 ballot and address reserved for the Groveland Fire Department.
I'll second it.
Director Kwiatkowski, there's a public comment that was submitted to everyone in the chat box from Bob Asquith. I don't know if you're wanting to call for public comment now. I just wanted to make sure we didn't, or give him the opportunity to maybe address that before we call for the vote.
Absolutely. Bob, would you like to speak on that?
I think it's all heading. Okay.
I just wanted to, this was something that our future county supervisor had posted on Facebook, was asking for kind of some community feedback about taxes. And she mentioned both the TOT and the county tax. And there were well over 200 comments in about 48 hours. And predominantly they were two kinds. They were either people that were totally opposed to any tax under any circumstance, or people that just didn't get it. They didn't understand what a TOT was. And that's the backdrop that I see happening right now. It seems, just from my standpoint, which is a marketing person, it's not a matter of throwing it on the ballot and seeing what you can do with it. We barely passed the ambulance tax a while ago, and it's a matter of getting enough groundwork laid for it. So the other thing that is, I think, to be factored into this is the potential for the projects at Terra V and under Canvas, which would put a lot of pressure on GCSD fire response and medical response in the not too distant future. So it just, there's a lot of things that I saw that I just wanted to bring the board's attention.
Tracy sent a message saying Debbie Bautista said that we don't have to wait 2 years for the next election. We can have a special election. Now the cost of a special election, as opposed to doing it on this upcoming election, has to be quite a difference. Not that the cost of a special election would deter us needing the fire tax.
Hello, Janice, may I speak?
Yes, yeah, sorry.
You read the motion. Now, can you tell me exactly what we're voting on? What are we voting to do or not do, for or against, so that I understand it completely before I vote?
We're voting to direct the general manager to work closely with the county on a special tax measure for the fire service and prepare the documents and actions necessary to prepare the measure for the consideration of the voters. Now, if we approve this today, we still have to have, Pete had said, at least a couple of meetings regarding how much we would ask for, what was needed, what's necessary. So Pete, if we voted for this today, could we, within those next two meetings, decide not to do it? We have until August, I mean, we have to decide right away, but.
If we don't submit a ballot measure by the 7th of August at close of business of 2020, then it's not going to be on the ballot. So if we can't come to conclusion on this, it won't make the November ballot. It doesn't mean we won't take it up in the future. It just means that we don't make that ballot. So, you know, and you do have to approve the ballot language and the resolution that defines how it's spent and the calculation of how much and all that. So, you know, this direction is broad enough where we would still continue to work with the county and monitor. And I would suggest that we have this on the special meeting agenda that we've already created for the 20th to, because that way we'll have been through the county's meeting tomorrow and they'll have a better handle on which way they're going. And then we can take our first action related to a measure at that time, whether, you know, whether we're proceeding in advance at the November, whether we're gonna hold out for a special election or a future election, those decisions can be made at that time too.
Yes, John.
I can go along with that. I mean, as long as we're not committing to going with the county right now. I mean, the county didn't they try to pass a couple of tax things last election and failed? So, I mean, if they failed there and then they fail again, that's two in a row. I mean, that's getting to the point where, okay, we're not going to be able to pass anything if we keep failing at these things. And they've failed already at the TOT and I think there was the fire tax on there. So that's already failed. And then they're going to do it right away again at the very next election.
Yes, I don't know.
So as Pete has alluded to, but I just want to make clear, when we started, I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time, and I'm sure the county has been talking about it for a long time, and I attended a meeting over at the Black Oak, whatever, a year ago, where they were talking about it. Janice was there as well, and Andy was there, and, you know, we've had this discussion to just get everybody's ducks in a row. One of the things that we had presumed we were going to do in the process of drafting our own ballot measure was contract with these guys to send out and get a sense of the community's opinion about things. And if nothing else, by doing that, you at least get them aware of the fact that you're thinking about it so that it's something that they can't just ignore. I fully agree. I think it was John made the point, but it's certainly true that one of the things we need to stress when we're selling this thing is it's, you know, we're in a wildland area. This is a fire tax. Yes, it costs money, but if it gets you an extra point on, you know, an extra number on your ISO score or whatever your insurance company is using, it may keep them from canceling your policy. I mean, it's a major deal for people up here, but I don't think we haven't, because of the COVID thing hitting, our progress on where we were going to do has kind of gotten stopped. And I'm just, what I'm worried about is it's the same reason I'm worried about the county's TOT, is it already failed once. And once you bring up a ballot measure and it fails, and then you bring the same thing up again, you get all the anti-tax people start going, what are these dudes doing? And we got a lot of anti-tax people up in this neck of the woods. I'm more concerned about the timing. I mean, I think I agree with John, and I think we all, generally speaking, agree that we got to figure out how to fund the department satisfactorily for the future. And, you know, trying to cheap it out is probably not a great idea, although, you know, something is better than nothing. So, but I'm just really concerned.
Nancy, yes.
I didn't know if you had noticed that Tracy added on to Debbie's comment that if we did delay it and just do our own ballot, it would be $4 to $5 per voter by mail. So we have a rough idea what it would cost.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is really helpful having the county stand by. Thank you guys.
I have a problem with directing Pete to go check it out and see what we can do, and then we can talk to it further and figure it out. We don't have to make a decision today on whether we're going to go with the county on the ballot. So I don't have a problem with checking it out. I'm just have a lot of concerns over trying to get this done this quick, especially after you failed the prior election.
Okay, but our ballot, our measure would be separate from the county. So it's correct, Pete. So we would do our own process to promote this with the community and, you know, in our neck of the woods with our constituents. And, you know, there's a lot of us here on the screen today and we all know how to talk.
Yeah, generally, I think that's I think if the way ballots work for something like this is you only see the items that you're actually voting on. So we wouldn't actually see the county's measure because it doesn't apply to us. We'd only see our own measure.
Technically, I think we will see the counties on the ballot. That's what the county was discussing. It was some case law where, and Pete, go ahead and elaborate. I just want to make sure we didn't miss that.
Yeah, it's something to be discussed and decided upon. The county council's office was of the opinion that the county's measure would need to show up on all the ballots. I'm seeing comments from Tracy as well that confirms that is still their thought. However, I have been speaking with other legal counsel because I've seen other ballot measures come out that were not, that weren't that confusing. It didn't have both measures on the ballot, even though you weren't paying it. That certainly wasn't the intent of that decision by the appeals court, and the circumstances are much different. So we have people looking into it. I just don't know whether we're going to be able to get a legal opinion that the county is comfortable with in time to get that issue resolved where it doesn't wind up on the ballot. Because I do believe that that case law does not apply and the county does not have to have it on the GCSD, on the ballot in GCSD. But again, I don't know that they're going to get that resolved. I don't know if everybody's going to be comfortable and say, okay, because they're concerned that the risk is if they have a ballot that doesn't meet the legal test, that you go through the process and it gets overturned right away. And I understand that concern. So anyway, because that really causes problems for a measure of ours. If you have a county measure and you have a GCSD measure, one's at one amount, one's at another, or both the same, whatever, two different measures on the same ballot, that's not going to go real well. So we've got to get through that issue. I'd say, you know, we could probably talk about this over and over and over. I think if I can summarize, I know we have a motion on the table, but just looking at the motion the way that it is, it's working closely with the county on the tax measure. Doesn't mean we have to mirror it or exactly do exactly what they're doing or the timing. It basically directs me to participate and help in their process and be, you know, supportive of the whole process moving forward, and preparing the measure for consideration by the voters. That also doesn't make your commitment for November or a special election or anything else. So if we uh, if the board did approve that motion with the understanding that this means we're going to come back at our next special meeting and have a discussion, a decision about the timing, you know, whether we were on the November ballot and action associated with that, or whether we're going to go in the future. And the other decision would be the amount of services that we were going to fund. Were we going to just put it out to cover all of our costs? Were we going to put it out at an amount that we felt was more palatable? Those decisions we can make at our special meeting and subsequent to that.
Okay, and a couple, Nancy, you had your hand up.
Well, Debbie just added, saying first year voters would see both measures, and then added, there's one ballot can differ by district. FYI.
Hey, John?
John, you hear John?
John, we can't hear you.
Hear me now?
Yeah.
I don't have a problem voting for this. I think that having Pete go over and look at it and check it out and work with him, that's fine. We make a final decision later, and then we can talk about all those concerns.
Jennifer, do we have a second?
We had, yeah, Director Morris seconded.
Okay, yes, Spencer.
Yeah, we pretty much all agreed that we're gonna, you know, give Pete the go ahead to continue working on this tax bill. I think something too, and Bob alluded to it, was public education. What people don't realize is if they don't vote for this tax, we're not gonna have a fire department up here, and that's pretty critical. I mean, it's just that doggone simple. And we got to get that information out to the people. So we got to put our heads together, and we're a great team. I mean, the way we've been working, we're a good team. We can come up with some answers. You get Ronnie involved here, and she is really good out there with social media. We've got to educate the public so that when Pete does come up with through the county with a united front and an amount that we need to tax it, the key word there is going to be needed. We don't want it. None of us want more tax. We need this tax to keep the fire department open. So, yeah, I'm like John. I'm going to support this motion, but I think we got to put in the back of our minds public education.
Okay, so do we have any more comments from open public comment? Do we have any comments from anyone, Jennifer?
No.
We have read the comments that came in on the Zoom chat from Tracy and from also helped with Debbie Batista and Bob Asquith. So I just want to clarify that with approving this motion, the thing I'll do is I'll participate in the discussion with the county board tomorrow. I'm sure Tracy and I will probably have conversations about it. And then we will, for our Monday the 20th meeting, the major regular agenda item for that special meeting will be I'm sorry. Also, in advance of that, I'll re-engage the consultant, let them know that we're moving this forward, and possibly get them engaged in that discussion so that we can bring their expertise into it. I will be presenting to the board the budget numbers, the numbers that we need. You'll be able to see the various components of that so we can make a decision on the amount that we would that we can agree on is the right number to go forward with. And then we can also make a decision at that time about the timing, whether we're in November, whether we're on our own, because there may be some other action between now and then on the part of the county board that feeds into this decision. Does that meet with the board's approval on this particular motion?
I think so. Are we ready to call for a vote?
Okay. It's been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Mora, to direct the general manager to work closely with the county on a special tax measure for the fire services and prepare the documentation and actions necessary to prepare the measure for consideration by voters. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Okay, the next.
I was just saying thank you again to the Tracy and Debbie Batista and everyone from the county that was participating in this discussion.
Yes, thank you, members of the county offices. We appreciate you being here. And we just got a message from Andy that he is logging off and he's ready for a fire tomorrow, he said. So there's something going on tomorrow. Do we want to take a lunch break now?
Nancy is saying no.
I'm happy going.
That was just everything is making noise all at the same time. I usually have my cell phone off during meetings. That sounds great. Where did we leave off on our agenda? Is this where we planned on?
No. Okay, we will leave. Well, at noon, it's like 3 minutes to 12. Yeah. Do we want to take a half an hour? Do you want to do a 15 minute? What do you guys want to do?
I want to do it as short as possible. As soon as the meeting's over, we're driving to Ely, Nevada. So I don't really want to still be here at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Well, I won't be here at 3 o'clock this afternoon, either that or I'll just cut out early.
John, we can't hear you.
John, get closer.
Lean in.
Hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, I'd like to push through and get through with it because I've got things to do.
You guys want to take a 5 minute break, stretch, fill your water cup, etc.?
Yep. That's good to me.
That's the plan. See you guys at, we'll come back at 12:05. Thank you.
I'm here.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
I'll just eat in front of you rather than take a lunch break.
Mm-hmm. Sure, that sounds good. Good to me. Okay, we are back in session. Time is 12:05.
Sorry, I was late.
We are going to pick up on item C, page 71. That is the COVID-19 response update report regarding the reopening the district office and to customers, office staffing, and board meeting venue.
Okay. The ever-evolving COVID-19 response and activities and understandings, and I'll tell you what, it is absolutely, if you think it's difficult at home to understand what's going on and which way to believe and which way to act, we're doing the same thing on ourselves personally, as well as working with a group of staff that are essential workers and have to go to work each day and get things done and work in the public and work in areas that we may not do from our homes, you know, because of our ability to be able to stay within the house and do what we have to do. So this has been a real effort on the part of staff to get to where we are today. And we have found that although we wanted to make a nice, easy, smooth transition into technology, and we knew we were going there, we got dropped into it, I believe, about the 19th of March, Jennifer, I think it was, 18th, 19th of March. We looked at each other and we told each other, we'll see you soon, and off we went. And from that point, we've done a significant amount of effort internally to get ourselves prepared to be able to continue our services and make sure that we didn't have any major failures in our system, and that we kept to the best of our ability, that we made sure that our employees were safe. You know, there were many things associated with this that to some degree we've certainly learned about, but you know, for example, the personal protective equipment, who would have ever thought that masks and hand sanitizer were going to be at a premium? I mean, masks don't have much of a shelf life, but hand sanitizer does. It doesn't last forever. Things like wipes and all that. So all of those things that we had the normal stock on hand. And when this first started, the larger agencies and everyone else purchased all the stuff up. So there were things that we didn't have access to that it took us some maneuvering to make sure that we did everything correctly. We've been engaged on a multiple times a day basis with review and conversations with the county health department. We don't spend a lot of time dwelling on things at the federal level, and with, you know, because we look, that has been delegated down through the states primarily, and from the states down to the county health departments. They can't exceed the authority given to them by the state, but they have their means for them to be able to get around some of this stuff and keep to reflect the local circumstances, as you probably are well aware. The main thing that we wanted to do with this discussion is let you know that the plan would be to continue to not occupy the office in the way that we were before. In the past, everybody showed up for work at the office at the time the office opened, and we left at the end of the day, and we did our work from a computer station at the district office, and that was the only place that we did work, except for managers who many times took it home or worked remotely as well as in the office. That has become a very outdated method of working. It was an, you know, it's built based on a couple of generations of work ethic and practices that required people to be in an office to be able to be working. And anybody that was not in an office was assumed to be doing something else that didn't have to do with working. And we have come to realize that we can accomplish a lot of objectives. We can keep the employees in the office and those from the field that come into the office much more healthy or less exposed to colds and, you know, different viruses that we typically have going around in the office. We can allow people that do have some type of illness to be able to continue working without a glitch in their productivity, if just so long as they feel okay to be able to do it, and don't have to burn their sick leave and can get that work done from home. We have found that it makes for a better work environment and that people have some flexibility in their ability to be able to keep up with personal responsibilities at the same time, you know, and understanding that the work hours are not necessarily fixed at, 7:30 in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon. It's been amazingly productive and I strongly support it. The other thing is the administrative office, as I outlined in this report, is not, it's set up in a very 1970s style. It's got the bathrooms at the furthest away point from the administrative offices. It's got hallways that are 2.5 feet wide, that you have to pass people, you get dead-ended in the copy room. Or if you're trying to access supplies or anything else, you get, you know, cornered in there. There's no way out. And the customer service area, you can tell, was configured after the fact as an afterthought in a way. And it does not provide much space when you have to consider about 30, I think it's 32 square feet or something for each person in to allow for adequate distancing. And that, in the discussions within the industry and in the training that we've been to, is likely not going to be a short-lived temporary situation, especially with public agencies. We are going to be required to have provisions to be able to separate people in physical means. And that's been one consistent thing throughout this whole pandemic. So I think I've outlined quite a bit here in the report. We have the workstations configured at home, for four employees. Those employees will also be doing some office hours. Myself, I'm likely going to have midweek regular hours. Certainly, in reality, the only reason that I am doing it is to be able to get together with everyone and to be able to, you know, where I've got to make physical signatures on checks and different things like that. It doesn't mean I don't want to be in the office, but when we're in the office together, it's no different than when we're having a staff meeting just like we're having now. So it's really a different time. And I can, Jen can answer any questions as well. But we've developed a series of protocols and procedures for those that are in the office and those that are working in the field for what is required and what we're providing them to be able to do their job. And, you know, nobody's being asked to do anything that puts them in harm's way or potentially in harm's way without the proper safety equipment. Whether it's, breathing apparatus, whether it's masks, whether it's coverings, face shields, gloves, and in the office now it's separation, it's modified work schedules, and work locations, implementing technology to the best that we can. I have to say probably the hardest thing we had to deal with was the face coverings. Just because there's, as you know, there's a real disconnect among the population on whether it's right or whether it's wrong and what we should be able to require and what we shouldn't. And unfortunately, we as a district do not have the discretion to say, I think it's wrong for face coverings. And I'm not giving my personal thoughts here by any means, but there was feedback initially that it was not the right way to go. That we should not be requiring employees to wear face coverings. And there were, you know, the normal response of why that was inappropriate, but we were able to work through that with the understanding that, you know, I mean, if you got to step away from a situation where you can't wear a mask and you're in someone's space and you're not comfortable with it, step away. Somebody else can go in. If you can wear a mask, you do wear a mask at all times. And by mask, I mean, you know, whatever the face covering would be. And so that probably has been the hardest just because of the almost quasi-political nature of that particular directive and the response to it. So I think we've come to grips with the whole thing. We've settled into a groove of working remotely. Jennifer and Rachel and Renee and myself, I think, have been communicating well and getting a lot done. So we do have a couple of things we need to update, and I want to make you aware of those because they will show up on your future agenda. and that would be and I'm going to scroll down to that. The continuity plan, that's a requirement. The State Water Board is also echoing that we need to make sure that we have continuity of operators for the system. And then obviously we need a continuity of administrative operations as well. And that means to make sure that we have adequate staffing, adequate training, adequate ability to bring in contractors and a plan to integrate all of those things. We will be working with a consultant to get a proposal to develop that continuity plan. We've talked about it with the board in a couple of different ways about staffing levels and responsibilities and all that. This could be the same consultant that does the job description update, the, you know, position specification, but this will be more detailed based on the requirements of how do we maintain continuity? What are our options? It's a big task. Seems easy enough, but how do we have enough people that are qualified to be able to do it? If we had one positive case in Greg's shop, and everyone else had been exposed, then we would have a situation where we would have to significantly modify operations, and that's difficult. And in the field, that's even worse, you know. Hire an architect to evaluate the offices and look for design improvements there, and that's something that we'll need to get some professional input on because I can't design offices. I don't know what the layout would be. There's a lot to do at that office, if you can imagine. It's not, but somebody might look at it and say, all you got to do is just put the doors here and reconfigure it this way and put cubicles in two different locations or whatever. We're not looking to plan to reoccupy the office with every single person. I want to make sure that is clear, unless, again, if the board says, no, we want to have everybody in the office and that's where we want everybody to be based and no one working at home unless there's an emergency, then we'll have to talk about that particular policy. Because at this point, I'm not looking at vacating the office, but it'll be a rotating schedule into the office. And we will set the office up so that, you know, if there is directive that everybody has to be in the office in the future, that we've thought about that in our improvements. And we plan to do that. some disinfection that we may want to do. We're really not supposed to have the you know, common areas open for public gatherings. The playground, the bathrooms, that kind of stuff. And we need to plan to have those professionally disinfected and probably on a fairly regular basis. As you can imagine, playgrounds could be a big location for coming in contact with others with the virus. So I included some information, a lengthy presentation by one of the legal firms associated with CSEA, and some of the memoranda that we've issued internally. So I'm open for discussion if any.
Do we have any directors that want to make any comments?
Yes, this is Spence. Just so we're going to have to change the way the office is configured. I mean, knocking down walls and however it's best configured. I don't see any problem with that other than the cost might be something we have to figure out where we're going to get the money for it. But yeah, I can understand everything you said. I can see why it's necessary in today's pandemic. Nobody knows when it's going to go away. So it's going to be interesting. And as I said before, you guys have had so much more put on your plate. It's amazing, but you're keeping up. Keeping up. It's amazing.
I'd like to make a motion that we, the COVID-19, excuse me.
I think this is just
correct. It's information only. Thank you very much, Jennifer. I just saw that. Do we have any comments from the members of the public?
I haven't received any through chat or email.
Anyone that's connected by phone, would you like to make any comments? Okay. I think we all agree with Pete. This is something that we need to look into. And thanks for all the information that's attached to this. I really like that information that the legal firm provided through CSDA. It's got a lot of questions and answers on there, and it's great. Thanks, Pete.
Yeah, that was Jennifer and I looked at each other after going through that and knew we were in for a completely different environment than we had expected that we were, you know, it's when you have a small staff, it takes a lot of work on everybody's part to get it done. So I appreciate everybody.
I'd like to say that, you know, I think you guys have been really out in front of this pretty well. And just for future reference, I'm a big fan of remote working when you can.
I agree with Bob. I think remote working is good. So not gonna get me wanting to change that, that's fine. Everything's getting done and everybody's doing a good job. Really appreciate it.
What's interesting, in the very beginning, I had assumed that everyone in the office in particular was going to be that they couldn't wait to get back into each other's environment to be able to see each other physically every day, and that was going to be a real problem if it were long term without that interaction, you know. And I think I have to say Rachel's probably the biggest advocate for, when she asked me one day, you know, so what are we going to do about this? This is feeling so productive. Are we, you know, we're getting so much more done the way that we are and communicating so much better. Are we going back to where we were, or what do we have, you know? So, and then, you know, Jennifer's worked really hard to pull it all together with her staff and proven to me that it's working really well, and they're actually enjoying it in the offices where they don't feel left out. It's nice and productive and quiet, and you know, they on all aspects, it's working well.
I would just say that's been
one. There was one question that came up. Sorry. So are we at all vulnerable for our lab work? I mean, how is that being taken care of?
In what way, Bob? What type of lab work?
The water, the daily water treatment, or the three times a week analysis and whatnot. I'm not sure where that, I know that the local person closed down three years ago. I mean, where do we get that done? And is the courier posing any problems?
Everything is working just as it was on that. The courier service is still moving the samples. The lab is, and Twain Hart is still doing their work, and we're still able to grab the samples. So, on that front, there has not been a glitch, but that's also part of the,
I guess one of my question then is, you know, what is the Twain Hart Labs continuity plan?
I probably they don't have one in reality. I'm fairly familiar with them, and they're a pretty small operation. But the thing is, what we would do is we'd just route the samples down to Modesto. It would just be a.
We have our backup plan in position. Okay.
Yeah. Jennifer, you were getting ready to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say, out of kind of a result of this, of the silver lining of this whole COVID thing was the ability to actually, this was kind of like an experimental, we would never have been able to, I mean, probably not with at least some significant time down the road with remote working becoming a lot more prominent, which probably would have happened just evolving, with technology in the next several years, but it kind of forced us to jump into this sooner. And it's actually been, really nice. You realize, like we've said, we've been so much more efficient, and you don't realize how many distractions you have at the office or how much time is actually kind of just, I don't want to say necessarily wasted, but just not spent as productive as we would like. And also, I've noticed a really big change in people's overall kind of well-being, their engagement, their excitedness. It's just, especially with, even the office staff that are currently working, but Renee and Pete and Rachel and myself, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like we're that kind of like, oh, how are you doing? Oh, we're kind of tired, or everybody just seems so much more engaged because of time management and the work-life balance. So it's just been really interesting to see, because when this first began, I was one of those people that wanted to go back into the office because it was just a huge change and it was different. But I'm really grateful for it now, because I've really seen how beneficial it's been to both my personal home life, but also as far as my like work product and focus at work goes. So it's just been nice. Just wanted to add that in there.
Thank you, Jennifer. Okay, we are getting onto our 12:30 meeting. Thank you for the information again, Pete. Pete, do you recognize any names on here from the meeting?
Jillian, I think, is part of the group here. We just love these Zoom meetings. It's crazy to meet all these new faces so Michelle and Jillian, I assume you're both with PHI.
Yes, hello.
Fantastic.
I thought I just got in the mail today.
Oh. Ooh, cool.
So I'll leave it to them. You have in your packet, you have a copy of the presentation that they can go through, and we can talk about. Just answer any questions, and we appreciate the opportunity to hear from you.
Yeah. Can you hear me? Me okay? Yep.
So can you, is it possible to put the presentation on the screen?
Yes.
Okay.
Can people, can we see this? This is how I received it. So I didn't receive like just the, it looks like maybe this is a PowerPoint for just the slides.
Yeah, just slides, that's fine. Uh-huh. And then I can go through it. So, okay, perfect. So my name's Jillian Manley. I'm the membership specialist for the state of California for PHI Air Medical. And I joined PHI in February this year, but my husband's actually been a pilot for PHI for 18 years now. He started in the gas industry in Lafayette, Louisiana, and we moved to Sonora, to the air medical side in 2004. So he's been at the Sonora base as a pilot for 16 years now. And also on the call with me today is Michelle Guthrie. She's a flight nurse and paramedic at the Sonora base. And I believe, Michelle, you've been at the Sonora base since it opened, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And then also on the call with me is Brian Couts, who's the membership director and program manager for the membership program. So you can move to the next slide. Okay, so PHI Air Medical started in 1949 in the oil and gas industry in Lafayette, Louisiana. Expanded into air medical in 1981. The Sonora base in Tuolumne County has been open since 2000. We also have another base in Modesto that opened prior to that. So. We provide air ambulance across the country and air medical ambulance across the country. So you can move to the next slide, please. Can you go? Oh, okay. Okay, great. So we care for more than 30,000 patients nationwide. We currently have 83 bases across the country. 60 of those are community-based programs, which is very similar to what we have in Modesto. And we maintain the strongest safety program. We fly more IFR flights in inclement weather than any other company out there. We provide quality education and community outreach to the communities that we work in. And we have the best aircraft maintenance record. And I think Michelle, this is, if you want to take over the next slide, that'd be great.
Yep, can you guys hear me okay? Yeah, so like, can you guys hear me okay? Okay.
Yes,
so like Jillian said, I started in at the Columbia base in 2002, just shortly after the base opened. But prior to that, I have worked in Groveland. I worked Groveland Ambulance for 2 years straight when I was going to nursing school. So I was a paramedic on Tuolumne County Ambulance since, oh gosh, I started in 1990 with Tuolumne County Ambulance. But anyways, so our base consists of a flight paramedic, a flight nurse, a pilot, and a mechanic every day of the year, 24/7. And then we function under a medical director, and our medical director comes out of Doctors Medical Center. But to the bases at the north, we also have another medical director up there, and we have access to him as well. So he signs off on all of our PHI policies, but then we also work under our local EMS policies, our Tuolumne County EMS policies. Go ahead and scroll to the next one. I'm on a Zoom meeting. The thing that sets PHI apart from ground ambulances is that we provide rapid transport, and we also have an expanded scope. So as you guys know, Groveland is, you know, an hour away from the closest trauma center or stroke center or cardiac care center. So the ground ambulance tends to fly a lot of patients that need the higher level of care and also the facility. So we provide rapid transport, but we also provide medications that ground ambulance providers are not authorized to carry because they're paramedics. Because we have a nurse on board, we the nurses and the flight paramedics have an expanded scope. We also have a transport ventilator. So something that we do quite regularly is provide advanced airway for patients and place them on ventilators so that their respirations can be managed. We also have IV drip medications. We also can do fetal monitoring. And our base, actually PHI California, is the first air medical base in California to carry whole blood, plasma, or TXA, which is a blood clotting medication. So we're pretty proud of that because we've been now, I think we're in our second year of carrying whole blood, which is huge. Prior to that, patients would only be able to get saline. And even sometimes we go into like Sonora Regional, for example, and they'll use our blood because we have it on hand immediately. We also have night vision goggles, which is something that since I've been there is new to us. When we first started flying there, we used to fly into like High Mountain Lake or Bald Mountain or some of these other areas without goggles. But now that we have goggles, it just keeps us a lot safer. Kind of scroll on down. And I had touched on the types of patients that are typically flown out. So anybody who has a head injury, who's been knocked unconscious, who has blunt chest or abdominal trauma, pelvic injuries, multiple long bone fractures, they're going to get flown or transported to a trauma center. And that the paramedics make the determination to do that even without consulting the hospital. They have protocols in place that say if they're greater than 20 minutes from a hospital, fly the patient. Also, cardiac events like cardiac arrest, patients that have been resuscitated, or your classic heart attacks. They will get the aircraft started immediately and get them to cardiac care center, which is in Modesto. For us would be Doctors Medical Center or Memorial Medical Center in Modesto. Unless we were more south of the 120, then we would typically go down into Fresno. Also strokes, so anybody who's had a stroke or a transient ischemic attack, those patients will also get flown to Modesto. Doctors Medical Center is now a certified stroke center. They do interventional procedures, which is not available at Sonora. So anybody who they deem is having a stroke that's greater than 20 minutes away from the hospital, they will fly them to a stroke center. Also high-risk OB. Sonora does have an OB department, but anybody who's high-risk, meaning that maybe they're in premature labor or they're a pregnant trauma patient, those patients will get flown to a high-risk OB perinatal center, and doctors in Modesto is the closest one for that. Burns is gonna be UC Davis. Anybody who's got greater than 15% burns or circumferential burns to the hands or the feet, they will get flown to a burn center. And again, that's going to be UC Davis, or if we're a little bit south of the 120, then it would be Fresno, Community Regional Medical Center in Fresno. And then your pediatric patients are going to, same thing, they're going to go to either UC Davis or Community Regional Medical Center in Fresno, depending on our location. Because Groveland's kind of, pretty much we go to Sacramento again, unless we're, like I said, south of the 120. We'll go down towards Fresno, or if the patient requests, sometimes they'll have physicians and whatnot in Fresno already. So if you wanna move on to the next slide. So that brings us into coordination of patient destination. So we have like an appropriate care center based on the patient's injury or illness. And I kind of touched on that a little bit. Patients can request where they would like to go, but usually their illness or injury dictates where they should go. And usually they'll work that out on the ground before they, you know, when they, the paramedic tells the patient, hey, we're going to be flying you, you need to go to a trauma center. You're going to go to the closest appropriate center, which also supports billing. Insurances will pay usually for the closest appropriate facility. If a patient says, well, you know, Modesto's closer, but I really want to go to Fresno, you know, there's a chance that their insurance may not cover a portion of that flight. So again, that's why usually I know for people, especially like in the Groveland area, we've always encouraged membership because there are people, a fair amount of people who live in Groveland, but maybe seek treatment down in Fresno. And that's true for like up towards the park too, towards Mariposa County. A lot of those people go down into Fresno for medical care as opposed to going into Modesto. Let's see, and weather conditions and range. So basically, in Sonora, we fly by visual flight rules. So if there's, low ceiling or clouds, that kind of thing, we don't fly through that. We have an aircraft in Modesto who is instrument rated. And if they can get out of the valley, a lot of times we're clear up here and foggy in the valley. A lot of times they can fly out. Like we can't fly into the valley, like into Modesto or Fresno, but they can because they have instruments. So that's the reason that our company has two different platform types in this area. So we have, you know, our aircraft, which is a smaller airframe aircraft. If you look back on the pictures, you can see we have a smaller aircraft and it's more capable at higher altitudes. We do more backcountry things. And then the aircraft in Modesto has instrument capabilities and they kind of tend to do more long range, like they could fly over the clouds, into the clouds, through the clouds, as long as they have enough clearance below the clouds to land. So I don't know if that makes any sense at all. What I do know is that last year, our Sonora base, we did over 400 flights out of Tuolumne County. And then our Modesto base backed us up 40 times. So a lot of times, or most of the time, actually, if we're on a flight, our Modesto aircraft is called second. Do you guys have any questions on any of that? I don't, maybe pop to the next slide. I may have covered all the stuff Jillian wanted me to cover. Let's see. This one I could touch on. This slide just shows our air medical bases in California. So we have the Sonora base, we have Modesto base, we have Redding, and then we have a fixed wing up in Redding also, which can do longer range flights. They have come down and done long range flights for us out of Sonora, but it's not usually typical. Usually we can get that done with between either us or the Modesto IFR program. And I think the next slide is probably for Jillian. Did you guys have any questions on the medical stuff or?
Yeah, I'll just go over the membership stuff and then we can have some questions at the end.
Okay. There you go.
Okay. So membership with PHI shields the patient from any out-of-pocket expenses. And so if a patient is flown, what we're proposing is a limited coverage area for any patient that's flown from originating within Tuolumne County. And so if flown originating in Tuolumne County, from either an interfacility transfer from Sonora Regional or a scene call, we would cover the patient for any out-of-pocket costs, co-pays, deductibles, any expenses. There would be no limit to the number of times a patient can be transported by PHI and no financial coverage limitations. We've basically based the proposal on 3,500 households. I believe that's what you have in the Community Services District. And what we're looking at is $5 a household with a one-time cost of $21,000. And that would cover any transportation, like I said, originating from Tuolumne County. And then they would have the option to upgrade to the national coverage program for an additional $35, which is a discounted rate, $15 off. So it's normally $50 per household. And the other option, there's actually two options. So the second option would be to have an automatic opt-in on your water bill where they pay monthly 75 cents, remit 50 cents to PHI, 25 cents of that would be kept by the Groveland Community Services District to cover any operational costs. So Brian, do you have anything you'd like to add? I can't hear you.
We can't hear you, Brian.
No.
Gosh, you gotta just love technology.
I had a quick question. It on the proposal it says $6 per household and you quoted $5. And then what was
That's okay. Yeah.
What was the price for two people per household? What was the price?
Okay, so the two options are so $6 per household, which comes out to $21,000 for the 3,500 households, and that would cover everybody in the house. And so what we would need is just a list of the service district addresses. And then we'd provide you with stickers that people can put on their insurance cards and things like that. And then the second option is a monthly, it would be a monthly charge on their water bill or their community services district bill, which would be for 75 cents. And then 25 cents of that would go back to the service district for, to cover your administrative costs. But the first option is easy because it's just a one-time fee and there's no administration of the program. If somebody's flown, they just let us know they're flown and then we'll waive the fees. Has anybody been flown by PHI on the call? I mean, I know, actually, yeah.
I have. This is Rachel, and me and my children were in a really bad car accident in 2011, and myself and my son were both Medifly. I went to Modesto, and they took him to UC Davis, and then my daughter was ground transport to Sonora.
Does anyone have any testimonial PHI program? Personally?
I'm really happy that the program was offered to us at all. I was surprised to learn about it when we moved up here 4 years ago, and we've belonged ever since. I think a lot of people up here have, I'm sorry, Nancy, I didn't mean to cut you off. I think a lot of people up here have joined this.
Yeah.
I dare say most people do. It seems like every car you see has the sticker on it. Almost every.
Well, and just speaking from experience, I've been around a long time, that there's a huge membership base in Groveland. We had a membership representative who did a lot of groundwork when the base first started here. And I know that we have saved a lot of the community service district members a lot of money over the years just because of the membership program and the number of people that have supported it. Because like I said, I worked ground ambulance up there for many, many years, and there's just no question. I mean, if somebody truly needs to be flown out, they fly them out. I mean, it's a given. So the gal who gave her testimony of being flown, I mean, you could tell that that's a little emotional for her still, but I'm, you know, really grateful that you're here to give your testimony. And that's why we're so passionate. Mm-hmm. You know, those of us who work at the base, like Jillian was saying, her husband's been a pilot there for what, 18 years, Jillian? 17, 18 years? Well, he's been with PHI, but he's been at the base almost as long as I have. And those of us who work there, we live in this community. So we take great honor in serving our community. And just like the when I worked ground ambulance up there in Groveland, that was Groveland's ambulance. Even though it said Tuolumne County Ambulance on it, you know, the taxpayers paid for that ambulance to be there. And I know that we take pride in our ambulance, our air ambulance, our ground ambulances, because, you know, we want to see that service to be available, be made available to the residents whenever they need it. So that's my hope.
Thank you, Michelle. Is there any other director comments or question? Yes, Nancy.
Unmute myself. I was just curious about your blood and plasma. Can somebody like just donate and it goes to you guys, or where do you get it?
No, we get our blood from the South Texas Blood and Tissue Center. So it comes from Texas, because that's just the program. That's where our blood program originated out of. So it basically gets shipped to us overnight from there. So we carry, we have three units. We have two with us all the time on every flight. And then we've got a unit of blood and a unit of plasma for backup. So if we were to use it on a flight, we would restock with a unit of blood and a unit of plasma and then place an order, and then it would ship to us in 24 hours.
Any other comments or questions?
So if we had, this is Pete, if we had the, if we entered into an agreement or move forward with this program, you would lose some of your higher paying folks in that have the deal through Pine Mountain Laker and the general public group within Groveland. Is that, I mean, is that calculated into the total? It's not that you said you had a pretty good membership in the Groveland area.
What would happen is their memberships would continue as a national membership, and then when they go to renew, they'd be able to renew at a lower rate. So they would still, instead of paying the $50 annual rate, they would pay the $35 rate. So we wouldn't necessarily lose them, but they would end up getting a discount. Everybody in the entire community services district would be covered for any out-of-pocket expenses. So I don't know if you know of anybody that, I mean, Rachel knows because, you know, she's been through it, but the cost of out-of-pocket costs can be extremely high with the air ambulance, because we do have, you know, the pilot and the nurse and the paramedic and the helicopter and the mechanic. And so, and it's basically a flying ICU in the air. So we're able to basically just bill the insurance company, and then we weigh pocket costs, so nobody will get a bill in the end. They just need to let us know, and we won't even send one. Brian, can you hear us now, or can you?
Can you hear me now, by chance?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I'm so sorry. That's the new norm, right? The Zoom meetings. I apologize for that. I think maybe an internet issue for me, but I apologize. Hello, everyone. Michelle, thank you so much. That was an incredible insight for you to participate, and thank you. Everyone, Jillian too, but I, you know, we're working with more and more counties and communities and cities across the nation to help them solve this problem, because it's the, you know, a big part of it is what Michelle's talked about, is we provide this valuable service to help save lives, help improve the recovery rate for people that are injured or need urgent care. And with rural America, more and more hospitals are closing each and every day, especially with this COVID crisis. We're seeing more of that, and our services are more and more important. So we are reaching out to the communities we serve to offer these type of programs that can help on the backside of the equation. So I'm not a paramedic, and I am not a nurse, or I'm not of that expertise, but what Jillian and I do is we're out working with the community, supporting our bases and offering on the backside so we can prevent you and your residents from having to face that backfilling, which we, you know, you search on the internet and read all the horror stories about people getting those back bills because, you know, people don't, I mean, insurance industry is tricky and certainly the cost for this type of service is very expensive. And so most insurance companies limit the amount that are paid for these type of services. And as you've heard and know, generally there's a lot of out-of-pocket expense. And so the number one reason people file for bankruptcy is typically is because of medical bills. And so we're going to bill an insurance company. We're going to bill a third party, but your residents will not have any out-of-pocket expense for their air medical transport, saving them a lot of money and keeping that money in your community so they can pay their property taxes, so they can pay their water bills, so they can buy more things and be involved in supporting the community. So we're seeing a lot of growth in this type of program nationwide. And so we're reaching out to you and others throughout the country to offer this as an option. The program is one of two ways. As you said, it's a pay a monthly type program versus a pay it all at once type program. And on the one option, then it becomes a little more labor intensive because there's a roster. We have to be able to verify and validate who has been flown so we can avoid them getting a bill or waive that bill if they got one and keep that money in your community and help them, but as well, just provide a great valuable service for everyone in the area. So I've been out there many times to certainly Sonora. And again, there's some very, you know, talk about driving on some of those roads, and it's a beautiful place, but boy, there certainly are accidents and incidents. And then if you toss in the Yosemite part of it as well. So as Michelle said, over 400 transports per year. We're providing 440 transports to the community today. And with this program, the designated roster of residents would not have to worry about the back end side of the billing portion of this. So any questions on that?
Yes, I'd like to know what other districts in the Tuolumne County you guys have signed up for this, if possible?
The right now we currently have, we have several. One is the Miwok Indian Tribe. So the Miwok Indian Tribe has an agreement, has had one with us for years. So they're on, you know, again, with the casino, the Black Oak Casino, they've had several, you know, many transports there. We also have an agreement with Trinity County up north, way up north, and then to the south we have Amador Calaveras with American Legion Ambulance. We have an agreement with them to help serve those regions and those parts as well. So it's these type of this nature are limited. So it generally applies to the general area. It's not a national program. And then as Jillian had said, we have the option to upgrade from the residents can call us and upgrade their program to cover them nationally with our 60 bases nationwide, in addition to what you have there in Sonora and Modesto in your neighborhood, in your region. So we have about 20 right now programs nationwide. Some are mostly counties, some cities, some large entities, school districts, people like that, large entities, large groups. And we've seen 167% growth in our membership program now in the past 2 years. It's growing tremendously. And I think a lot of that being driven by the need for this type of service more and more in rural communities that don't have the trauma centers where someone has a heart attack, a stroke, an accident, and needs to be transported. This program, again, is very beneficial to the residents and the community.
Okay, Brian, I was mainly curious on special districts in Tuolumne County. That'd be Twain Hart, the Tuolumne County Utility District, those other districts that have constituents in our area.
Not currently. We do not.
But I think that's going to be a great billion. You guys to look there. I mean, because
have you met Jillian yet?
Yeah, because honestly, you know, like the Twain Hart, you know, district, that would be perfect. I think, I mean, was going to talk to you guys about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Jillian's done a great job with us now. She's been here about just less than a year. So, and again, with her background and her skill set, I know she's out there reaching out, working with our bases talking to a lot of people. So these things kind of, they take time to put together the proposals, the meetings, the approvals, and we try to customize as much as can for what meet, you know, meets your needs. So, you know, right now we're growing and we're adding them nationwide, and we're certainly talking to you, and we're certainly going to be reaching out to others as well. And I know Jillian and I had talked as well, and we actually have a scheduled meeting tomorrow with Tuolumne County.
Yeah.
To speak to overall the larger, big, and again, that may take, it could take 6 weeks, it could take 6 months, it could take a year. It takes time for these, the larger the entity is, the longer it tends to take to put them together, these large agreements. So we have a lot of programs nationwide, and we're adding more every day, every week.
Yeah, and some of the groups too that I don't know if you guys have mentioned, but some of our larger groups that we've had more recently are because we've come out with the first responder, firefighter EMS discounted rate. And so we've seen a surge in the number of first responders, firefighters, EMS, anybody who's medical can get the discounted membership rate. And then also the veterans is another group that we've gotten. And then like the Harley owners group, we've had that group for a long time. So we do have, and the Kiwanis, I mean, so there are a lot of, you know, groups, big groups in the county that are covered.
Let me ask a question about your pricing, just so I'm sure on how this works. If we were to do the annual payment, that would mean that we, the district, would give you $21,000, and then we would somehow figure out how to collect that back from our subscribers. Alternatively, we could do it monthly, but I think that's going to be a problem. We can't just be putting things on the bill that don't have to do with what we actually provide as a service. But is that right? I mean, it's a one-time, once a year payment on behalf of our water system.
That's right.
Yes, Bob, that's correct. It is. It's a one-time payment. It's very simple. There's a service agreement that our attorney drafts. It's a standard template that we have. It's just sort of talks about what the terms and conditions are, and it's very straightforward, but it's a service agreement. And then what we do is, because it's a service district, it's a sort of a defined area, we need some way to verify. And what we tell people is, much like your car insurance, if you have a transport, and if you're flown by PHI, we ask the member to call us and let us know through our membership phone number to let us know they've been transported. And we try to prevent people from getting bills, but if they get a bill, we'll make it go away. And we work together on that, so that if you're a member of the service district and you're covered by this program, you're then relieved, you and your household members are relieved of having to pay anything out of pocket for your air medical transport. And that includes unlimited number of household members. So it's a large entity. Yeah, large. Sorry, Bob.
So just to be clear about the coverage proposal here, this is for flights originating from Tuolumne County. So if I'm a water district member, so if I'm covered by this and I happen to be in Coulterville and have a heart attack, am I covered or not?
If it's outside of Tuolumne County, it would not be covered. Then you could you can upgrade to the national coverage that would give you the broader reach. And that's how we keep our prices so low, so our prices nationwide are the lowest in the industry. We have very low prices, and so these county defined service agreements, these groups are low priced. And then we try to cover everybody in the region and the service area, and this case it would be the service district plus the county. And then if someone feels they need broader coverage, they can upgrade by paying the additional $35, and they get national coverage all throughout the United States, wherever we have our 60 bases. It's posted on our website. So we actually have a coverage map there.
Yeah, so can I just touch on that real quick, Brian? Can I touch on that real quick? So we do service Coulterville. There is another aircraft in Mariposa now, so there are times when they may be closer, so you may potentially still get PHI us out of Columbia or Modesto, or you could potentially get the other provider out of Mariposa. But for example, if you ended up in the hospital at John C. Fremont, And they said, oh, you're having a heart attack. You need to be flown to, you know, the cardiac care center in Modesto. You could say, well, I'm a PHI member, and they would send PHI. So you can request PHI once you're in a facility, but when you're outside of the facility and a 911 call comes in, you're going to get the closest helicopter. But we do service, you know, Coulterville. We do service Mariposa County, Amador, Tuolumne, even Stanislaus County, Merced. You know, it all just depends who's available and how, what our distance is to the call.
Well, yes. I have a question for Bob. Are you saying that you are part of the Groveland Community Services District, but you live in Coulterville? The Groveland Community Services District.
No, but when we're not under COVID restrictions, I sing in a chorus down in Coulterville, so I'm down there.
Okay.
Yes, Nancy.
Also, Coulterville is only 10 miles away, so it's not unreasonable for people to go to Coulterville.
Right. And then they can upgrade to the national coverage plan for $35. And there, like Michelle said, that there is a chance that we could pick you up, but there's also a chance that the helicopter in Mariposa County might pick you up.
The reason I'm asking is because we cannot simply say, hey, we're going to give you $21,000 a year to do this because it's a nice thing for our subscribers, because that's outside of our scope of business. So if we were going to do it, we'd have to come up with a way to recover the money from our subscribers, knowing what they were paying for, which is not unreasonable. I mean, it's perfectly possible to do. We're going to have to be very careful about telling them what they're actually buying with it. You know, I mean, it's a public agency. We cannot just spend money on things because we think.
Okay, Nancy, please. Nancy's
going to
talk right now, please.
I have two questions. Okay, so I currently have the $50 a year plan. So I have the national plan already, correct?
Okay.
Yes.
And then, that would be the national plan.
And then also, as far as the insurance, is this something, I mean, I'm already a member, so I should already know this, but I don't. Like, you know, is it something that has to be like in your network? Like we have Blue Cross Blue Shield right now. Is there any chance they would kind of go, we don't care who this FICARES is, you know what I mean?
No, it's not insurance, it's a membership program. And what we do is we just waive the out-of-pocket expenses. So any fees, any deductibles, any copay, just wouldn't get a bill for that from us, so.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'd like to open it. Well, I don't know. Does somebody? I'd like to hear what Bob Asquith has to say.
Hi. So the first thing I have to say is thank you very much for even considering this. This is those of us that have come from an urban area up here. I have no desire to be the second 911 call. Knowing that the ambulance, when it goes off the hill, is off for at least a half a day. So, thank you. I got a couple, three questions. One is, who authorizes I have a heart attack, I'm here in Groveland, who authorizes the use of PHI? Is that the first responders that are basically CAL FIRE /GCSD?
Yeah, so I can answer that. So it could start with the first responder, your local fire guys there, or your volunteers. When I was working up there were volunteers up there still. I know that CAL FIRE's kind of stepped into some of the service district responsibilities, but and then it would be the ground ambulance. So they have a set of protocols. They have a trauma triage criteria. They have a stroke criteria. They have a cardiac criteria for flyouts. So it's all pretty much dictated by the EMS agency that they're working under, which is Tuolumne County EMS agency.
So is there any chance that I could wave my PHI card and for a stub toe go down by helicopter?
Yeah, then that wouldn't be appropriate use of an aircraft.
Okay.
But if you needed, you know, if you needed, if it's like, hey, you know, they might say, well, you know, maybe they could treat you at Sonora, but you think about the amount of time it takes you to get to Sonora versus Modesto. I mean, it's slightly longer to Modesto, but if you have, you know, an injury or illness that warrants being flown, then yeah, you could say I'm a PHI member and I'd rather go to Modesto for this because, you know, I think I'm having a heart attack or a stroke, you know, then you can definitely weigh in, but they're really good about determining who needs to be flown and who doesn't usually.
Okay, so second question. A lot of places in Pine Mountain Lake are rentals, both short-term Airbnb type and long-term. So how would those people be covered? They would, the places they're staying would be GCSD customers.
We, and again, we look at it from a standpoint, Bob, of you know, what does your driver's license say? What is your, are you receiving mail? That's really, we know there's a lot of temporary residents and people that are transiting through, especially with Yosemite nearby. So it would really be people that have a legal residence there, people that have an address, even if they are renters, they may not be property owners, but if they're receiving mail and say they have a driver's license, they have some connection to the community, that's what really we want to verify against, you know, that list, that roster. So we're looking in this type of program, because it's not a really defined, it's not an entire county, it's a subset of the county. So really we're looking at a defined list that you'll provide us that we're going to use to base the determination on waiving the cost.
Okay, and so I guess that's probably the answer to the third one, and that is when my daughter is visiting from the Bay Area, she would not be covered.
No.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
She's still going to know. Thank you.
Okay, this is an information and potential staff direction only at this time. No action is required. No vote will be taken. I want to thank you guys for being here today. This presentation was wonderful, and we do appreciate the service and hopefully any future service you might be providing us. Yes, Nancy.
And just to have kind of tag on to Bob's last question. His daughter lives down in the Bay Area. Is there any reason, you know, he or she couldn't just buy the $50 a year thing on the off chance that while she is up here, she did ever need it? Or can you only, do you only have, or, you know, services with certain areas?
No, yeah, so, she shouldn't have it. Oh, go sorry, go ahead.
There's definitely an option, Nancy, that we actually, for individuals, just on our standard website, you can go on and we offer a $50 rate for it. That's a household membership rate. But we actually do have for people that live alone, that live by themselves, they can purchase they can buy a national membership for only $30 for themselves only, for if it's just them, not a household rate. So Bob, that might be an option for them, for your daughter. And that would cover that general catchment area. If she was driving up and needed to be transported, she would then have coverage.
Yeah, there's her next birthday present, Bob.
And that would also cover her even in the Bay Area. She was in a hospital and needed to be transferred by air to another hospital, and she was a PHI member, you know, PHI could come in and transport her to another hospital. She wouldn't receive the hospital.
So legally, if somebody has a membership and they're at a remote hospital or they have to be upgraded to a higher level of care, by law, they can actually say, wait, I have a PHI membership, and they have to give us that first right of refusal and reach out to us and allow us to come transport somebody from one location to another location. So there's two types, obviously the scene calls, meaning obviously, you know, remote or on the side of a highway or in a field or somewhere someone is injured in a scene call, but the interfacility transport, that's absolutely right. So they could ask for us and we would come pick them up and take them to the higher level of care. And they'd have to give us that opportunity to service them as a member.
Sum up my feeling about this. I think this is, thank you for the presentation. It's very good. Certainly there are lots of people up here that have PHI memberships. And I think everybody that I know that has one that's ever had any dealings with you has been quite satisfied with things. What I see as being the tricky bit here is if we are going to serve as the point of contact to cause this particular program to happen, is A, is it legal? and B, how would we go about doing it? So I think, you know, I don't think we, so it's information only. I think that's where we stand, right? We got to figure out if there's a way to actually.
Yes, and that's what we'll do today by giving the staff the okay to look into this. So let's go ahead and I'd like to wind it up. We're getting far behind our schedule here. Do the directors agree that staff can take this from here? Okay, it looks like it's okay with the directors. So again, thank you guys for being here. Your pamphlet was wonderful and we appreciate all the information.
We'll work out the details and I'll bring it back to the board once Brian and I hammer it out and but good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye everyone. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's get back to, that was very informative. Back to our agenda.
Can I just interrupt and say I'm gonna punch it too, kind of just, we've got a long drive ahead of us, so 2 o'clock I'm done.
Okay, we're gonna do a speed demon thing here. So item D, page 102, the adoption of a resolution 33-2020 approving electronic signature policy.
I can just tell you, I've been doing electronic signatures for probably close to a decade, primarily internal approvals and that type, but purchases, purchase requests, and now transitioning into the small construction contracts and those types of things. Pretty simple. It's just a matter of documenting within the board that we're fine to do this. We're running things through legal counsel. Haven't run into any glitches as far as what we can do with these. There are some entities that require wet signatures, state grant contracts, for example. We just sign 2 pages, send those 2 pages back to them and they circulate it. So, and then real estate transactions are always, real property transactions are always typically a wet signature under notary. So other than that, we would be continuing to use Adobe Sign, which is you have to sign in with a username and password, and you can then protect that signature document so it can't be altered. And go ahead.
I'm sorry, Pete, to interrupt. I must step away for just a moment. I'll be right back.
We'll be here.
Please don't stomp on my account. I'm going to step away for a moment and then I'll be right back.
Okay, thanks, Ben. Okay.
So I was pretty much done on that. You know, if we find that we need and I'm not worried about security because we don't have a lot of things that we put digital signatures on. This isn't going to transition to checks at this point. I don't believe that was the intent in any way, but it's more just I might sign, you know, a couple of contracts a month. Those are primarily construction or consultant contracts or suppliers or something that I'm authorized under policy to do. That's pretty much it.
I move to approve resolution 33-2020 adopting an electronic signature policy.
Second that motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Kwiatkowski to approve resolution 33-2020 adopting an electronic signature policy. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards? Is absent. Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries with 4 in favor and with Director Edwards absent for the vote.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item E, and that starts on page 105, adoption of a resolution 34-2020 approving a plan check and inspection agreement for the construction of water system improvements to serve the airport estates development.
Okay, this is just the next step in the process of getting these properties annexed into the district and their infrastructure constructed. We take them in three separate chunks because in many cases they might fall off before they get, they might submit for annexation and find out there's some other, some factor that's going to get in the way, take it longer, make it more expensive. And so this is the first phase of the, or the first step is the development agreement or the deposit agreement. That is a feasibility level. Then there's the annexation agreement, which we've already entered into with this these property owners. And then this is the next step that allows us to be able to process their engineering and inspect their construction and make sure that everything has the right, has right of ways and everything else. And then it is offered to us for dedication. And then so long as they met all the requirements all along the way and pay any applicable fees, then we accept the infrastructure and then we can provide service. Once everything's annexed, the annexation has to be complete as well, or LAFCO needs to approve out of area agreements to provide service if they get built before the annexation is complete. So anyway, this is an agreement that's been reviewed by legal counsel, and it's got a map associated with it, and they're ready to proceed with construction or with final design and construction of the service lines. Wow, was that just riveting? See, everybody's super, super thrilled about it.
It was riveting, all right. Now, my... I lost the vocal for a second, but I got you.
Well, I think we lost that part of Groveland. Bob's frozen. John was frozen for a second. There he is. He's back. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Do we have any director questions on this? Any public questions? Do we have any public? Yes, Robert, Ronnie. No. Okay. I move to approve the resolution 34-2020, a plan check and inspection agreement for the construction of water system improvements to serve the airport estates development.
Seconded.
Okay, it's been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Armstrong to approve resolution 34-2020, a plan check and inspection agreement for the construction of water system improvements to serve the airport estates development. I will call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards is absent and Director Swan is absent. The motion carries with 3 in favor and 2 absent.
Okay, thank you. Item F, page 119, adoption of a resolution 35-2020 requesting the Tuolumne County LAFCO take procedure for the annexation of the airport estate subdivision parcels to the Groveland CSD.
So this is actually the first step in the annexation process. We have the annexation agreement with the property owners. And this is submitted, it's customarily submitted by the district by resolution that makes the annexation process application whole. And then it is, which starts the process with LAFCO that can take anywhere from a couple of months to half a year, most likely a short period of time.
Let's hope they move quickly on this.
Pete, I got a question.
Mm-hmm.
Am I muted? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
We okay. Got you.
Can we use LAFCO to authorize us to provide air medical ambulance?
If we were providing or facilitating the service, I don't know. We on that particular item, there's a number of things I have to resolve.
Put that in the back of your mind. I'm sorry for taking up time. Go ahead. No.
It's something that's it's part of the checkoff list to get that before that comes back to the board. Because okay. Our attorney, it would be legal counsel that would say yay or nay for sure.
Okay. Sorry to distract.
No worries.
I was temporarily indisposed with my Sierra Nevada. I just wanted to be clear from the previous thing, which y'all apparently went ahead and approved, which is fine. We don't on this plan check stuff until they provide a deposit.
Yeah, they've already provided a deposit.
Great.
Yeah. This is actually their second deposit. They deposited $3,000 previously at the feasibility level. This is the second $3,000. For the annexation processing there was an estimate I didn't include it in the packet, a total estimate of probably another $3,000 to $4,000 to get
fine through. I'm sorry, I'm just a little twitchy about that because yeah. of historical reasons. I move to approve resolution. Oh, did you already move?
No, not this one. I don't think, did we?
No, not this.
No, we're on resolution 35-2020, the LAFCO information.
Page okay, 119. Well, I'll move to approve resolution 35-2020, requesting Tuolumne County LAFCO to take proceedings for the annexation of the Airport Estate subdivision parcels.
I'll second that.
It's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong to approve resolution 35-2020 requesting the Tuolumne County LAFCO take proceedings for the annexation of the Airport Estate subdivision parcels to the Groveland CSD. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously.
I have a quick question. Do we need to, as directors, ask the staff if they've done all the steps that are necessary before they bring it to us for a proposal and a vote? Particularly this item that Bob was talking about, would we have voted on these estates without them making the deposits that were necessary?
This agreement did not have the LAFCO resolution didn't have a deposit associated with it.
Yeah, I know. I'm talking about the prior. We've already voted on the LAFCO. That one's done. I'm talking prior simply because I don't know all the steps, and I know Bob does because he's been here for a long time, but some of the directors don't know all the steps, and we're taking it. I know I am. That staff understands what's necessary before they ask us to vote on something.
Janice, I'm sorry. I mean, actually, it says it right in the agreement. I kind of knew that I was reading it. I spent a lot of time my first year on the board trying to recover $100,000 from a badly handled thing that was really the district's fault because they didn't make sure that they had deposits in line before they did. So I'm just twitchy about it. That's all. I'm sure staff is on top of it. I have no question about that.
It's not a bad idea to ask though certainly something that if I gave myself a little bit more time in putting this documentation together, check some of the boxes that yes, we have, you know, this was prepared by legal counsel, and yes, they do have a deposit in place and have met all conditions of the prior agreements. those are good things to have in a quick statement and a staff report. So I'll try to address those.
Thank you. Okay. Moving on to, are we done? No. Item, yeah, we're done.
No, we have 6G.
I'm sorry. 6G. Yeah, we have 6G. Okay. Consideration of a communication partnership arrangement with the internet service provider Cal.net related to the use of district facilities and provisions of a broadband internet service to the communities of Groveland and Big Elk Flat, including district facilities.
Well, this happened the day after our board meeting where we talked about broadband. It was really kind of interesting because Kathleen Half has a long experience as a consultant working with the broadband coalition group that's been working for at least a decade on trying to get broadband internet throughout the Sierra Nevada region. And so she put me in contact with the one of the owners of Cal.net, and we've been in constant communication ever since then. We have included in the conversation our IT people to talk about the future of our internal technology and where that communication is planned for the future, how this would work in our day-to-day environment, what this could provide for the future of the district. In a traditional environment, we would be offering a piece of ground for lease to someone like AT&T. We've done it a couple of times for them to install facilities. And then that was our only involvement, leasing a piece of property and receiving revenue lease payments. In this particular case, at this point, we're proposing to go forward more as in a partnership arrangement. In that we would receive a specified, agreed upon level of service in exchange for the use of the district properties for locating towers that would serve both district needs and would serve internet customers in the region. Along with that, the proposal, if you can see, I don't have the page in the board packet, but there's a Google Earth image that shows what looks like Groveland being underwater. But
page 124.
Thank you, Janice. But that is the expected coverage locations with just the sites, I believe it was seven sites that they have that they're currently proposing up front. The ultimate goal long-term of this arrangement, if we can work out the details, would be that everywhere that there is a need, that facilities, equipment could be put in, especially if they have the opportunity to tie into the district power and or to the backup power that we have at the many of the site locations. So in other words, places that may not normally be able to be served because they're down in a hole, because we have a sewer lift station in the area, they can drop an antenna on it and push that signal out of that hole at the same time that they're serving the customers down in that hole that might not otherwise have service, and connect our facilities up as well with high-speed internet. They are funded by federal grant to expand the service according to identified needs. Groveland is one of those locations that has identified needs. And so we're working out the details of the arrangement. We've talked about this exchange for service. They would install the connection points, and for every site that we would put in, we'd have an additional two sites connected. So we still have some details to work out before this comes back to the board for an actual vote, but I just want to make sure that we're in alignment in proceeding with some type of an arrangement like this and conversation at this point.
So this is an internet service that we can, as individuals purchase. So can data calls be made with this if the power goes out and John needs to make a phone call?
It's another internet service provider that will have solid coverage in the community and is required under their grants to provide a certain level of service, a certain speed. In other words, they can't just come in and provide minimal service. They have to, I think it was, I don't know if he said it, 50 megabits download minimum. And I don't remember what the upload speed was. But anyway, it would be available for public connection, as well as it would be connecting to each of the district sites, each of the district pump sites and tank sites and anywhere that had to communicate and have internet access.
Yes, Bob.
Okay. So, this is fixed wireless. So if John's power goes out, but he can turn on his generator. Presumably they have their generator on. Yes, you would probably still have coverage. My biggest concern looking at this, and it's a nice proposal and it would certainly do us some good as a district, is this going to lead to us getting sued by Conifer? I mean, these people have competitors. Can we simply enter into an agreement like this without offering competitors to make a similar?
It's a good question, Bob. That is something that I'm already working with legal counsel on. If I wanted to make sure that we were, that before I spent money on legal review of something like this, that the board had an opportunity to have a conversation with me about it. That is definitely something that we would resolve right out of the chute. And if we needed
the idea of having a fixed wireless, you know, participating in a fixed wireless network by providing spots for them to hook up their sites is a great idea. And actually their proposal seems pretty reasonable from a compensation standpoint. It's just, I just want to make, you know, there is at least one direct competitor that has the same type of action.
Yes, and that would be something that I would defer to legal counsel. It probably, in all reality, on the surface, there's nothing prohibiting it. However, from a perception, political, conflict of interest, however you want to call it, legal counsel may say, you already know the competitors are probably not going to provide the same level of service. Step back from it a bit, put it out there and specify the level of service you expect. And then that's the one you enter into agreement with. So, yeah, I'm totally aware of that and that we'll resolve that before it comes back to the board for action. Good points. And Bob, that action might be sending it out for proposals. You know, I'm not sure whether it's going to be
whatever council says. I just want to make sure that we don't put ourselves into a sticky wicket in pursuit of a good thing. Because this is
So this is a vote to move forward with Pete and staff. Finalizing the partnership arrangement. We wouldn't be signing anything today. It'll come back to the board for an actual vote to do that. So is there any more comments before we take a vote on this to move forward? No, okay, Jennifer. Any public comments?
No public comments.
I'll make a motion that we approve the consideration of a communications partnership arrangement with internet service provider Cal.net related to the use of district facilities and provisions of broadband internet service to the communities of Groveland and Big Oak Flat, including district facilities.
Second.
I'll second that, Janice.
I think Nancy to it.
Okay.
I just, before we, I call for the vote, I just want to point out that that was the, that you made a motion on the actual agenda subject line, not the recommended action, even though I know we just kind of changed it, Pete. So are you okay with that?
Yeah, it's totally fine because there was a little bit of an urgency to get this moving because of how lousy our internet service is at the district office, where if we have two people on at the same time with a video call, it drops out. John just barely makes it, you know, which is unacceptable in that business office environment. And Tank 2, he's ready to put an antenna in there. But respecting what Bob's concerns were and you know, I think telling him, hey, we're ready to go, let him commit his resources to this. And we don't have to have that recommended action. The first one is fine, Jennifer, okay. Thank you.
So it's been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Mora for consideration of a communications partnership arrangement with internet service provider Cal.net related to use of district facilities and provision of broadband internet services to the communities of Groveland and Big Oak Flat, including district facilities. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Did you get public input? Sorry, public comment?
You did call for it before we got the motion after we called for that, I believe.
Okay. Yes.
Director Mora?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Edwards?
Aye.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously. And that was the last item.
Okay, thank you. Great job, you guys. We got a lot done.
Nancy, we have 17 minutes left.
Do you have any comments you want to make?
Have a safe trip.
Speaking of which, Rachel, I'll be on the road on the 20th, so will you send that next board packet to my personal email?
Yeah, sure will.
Thanks.
So you're certainly not stopping any. You must be on your way to the Great North.
Well, we're driving up to South Dakota for my niece's wedding on the 19th, and then on the 20th, we're driving to Oshkosh, Wisconsin, because, you know, it's like what we do, I guess. We normally would have been there for the big fly-in, but it's canceled. But one of our friends there was like, well, since you guys are going to be here, I think I'll come down anyway, because, you know, it's like, well, we kind of didn't plan on coming over there. Anyway, it's like, well, we're 12 hours away. We might as well go.
But I want to stop real quick and adjourn the meeting, please.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to do that.
Thank you.
Adjourn at 1:44 p.m.
Anyway.
How can you pass the opportunity to go to Oshkosh?